Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the City Council regular meeting on Tuesday, September 10th, 2013. And let it be known that we do have a quorum. All council members are present, and we'll call the meeting to order. And please join me in memory of Alan Stevens, the cyclist that lost his life here in Moore Bay on Highway 1, if we can just join me in a moment of silence in his honor. Thank you. And with that, Ms. Goldman, would you join us? You so greatly bring up the business spot every council meeting, so please lead us in the pledge.
Please stand. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Jan. And now for the closed session report, Mr. Schultz.
Yes, good evening. Prior to tonight's regular session, council met in closed session to discuss two items. The first item was property transactions. The property discussed was lease site 30W33W, which is the Bayfront Marina. The other item discussed was conference with labor negotiator. This is the conference with the city manager discussing the terms and compensation for various union groups that the city negotiates with. As to both these items, no action was taken that requires reporting under the Brown Act.
Thank you for that. And now on to mayor and council's reports. I'll look to my left. George, do you have anything?
Announcements? Well, this week, and we're going to have the Avocado Festival, so it'd be a good time for you to all get out and kind of just celebrate the ending of a great summer, and just go out and let's support these people. They do a lot of hard work in this. So,
thanks, George. Christine?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good evening, everyone. I have several announcements this evening. I'll start with a message from Cuesta College. They are kicking off their Cuesta College Book of the Year, and they always coordinate that with the county public libraries. They're having an event, Wine Down Wednesdays, W-I-N-E, and it is to celebrate the book that is going to be the Book of the Year, Orange is the New Black, My Year in a Women's Prison, by Piper Kerman. So if you'd like to support this wonderful event, which is produced every year at Cuesta College and free to the public, they bring in the author and they do an author talk and then a book discussion. It's a really wonderful event for free in the new beautiful Cuesta auditorium. So if you haven't ever attended, I encourage you to read the book and attend. It's a really great community building experience to talk about a book that maybe you and 500 of your closest friends have read in the same space. So if you'd like to support the event and have some wine, it is September 25th. And it's the Sour Adams Adobe, and that is in San Luis Obispo, 964 Choro Street. If you have any more questions about it or to get an exact location, you can contact Cuesta at 546-3921. And now I have two tourism-related announcements. I am your council representative to the Tourism Board and the Tourism Bureau, and I'm going to tell you about an event that's open to the public. Although it is focused on tourism, I think it would be extremely interesting for as many residents who have the time to attend to come out. It is, save the date, Thursday, October 3rd. And the event will happen here in the Vets Hall. It's from 9 a.m. until noon. And you can come and go throughout the day if you like. It's a long time to be here for the one program. But if you feel like you can't come at 9, it's okay. Still come and attend through noon. And they're inviting a speaker. His name is Carl Roboto, and he is a noted marketing strategist. And what he's coming here to do is to talk to us about providing an in-depth analysis of the Morro Bay brand. And he will also be giving his recommendations for a competitive strategy development to market ourselves in Morro Bay. So I think it'll be an extremely interesting morning. And many of us know that we have a very focused tourism economy that is truly growing. And I think it would be interesting to have a wide variety of the public come and hear what Carl Roboto has to say. So that is, again, October 3rd. And then the last announcement is also tourism related, and I just wanted to announce that it's really kind of an exciting opportunity for Morro Bay that, as you know, we are celebrating our 50th, and the state parks is celebrating their 150th, and we're fortunate that our director of tourism, Karen Moss, has been.
And then the next day, we had Kevin Larkin, who's the president of the American Dahlia Society. And we want to thank all those groups who had tables where they shared information about what they did. We had a special surprise, too, and I left it in my briefcase. 1 second. Don't go away. The Morro Bay Garden Club received a certificate of recognition from the American Dahlia Society in appreciation of recognition and celebration of the dahlia. And we consider this really very, very special. It's a national recognition for our little town. So we are very happy about that. My next announcement is just a little bit different. I want you to be sure and notice this wonderful T-shirt that I got from my friend. Whoops, let me move this so you can hear me talk. From Jack Smith. And what this T-shirt says is that skateboarding is not a crime in Morro Bay, California. And that's because 2 years ago, we passed ordinance number 10.76 in the City Muni Code that allows skateboarding as long as the skateboarder is not negligent or reckless and does not interfere with the flow of traffic and is not a hazard to pedestrians and vehicles. You need to obey traffic control signals, which among other things means stopping at stop signs. Basically, when you're out skateboarding in Morro Bay, remember to be cautious and careful about other people. So we do allow skateboarding in our town, and we ask our skateboarders not to be reckless. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Noah?
And that's one of the many good reasons why I don't skateboard anymore, as far as being under control and not being reckless. It's just it's not a good combination to be on a skateboard. Couple quick announcements. One is I've received a number of calls regarding the Chevron cleanup and remediation there in North Morro Bay, west of Del Mar Elementary, and I did just want to make a brief announcement and then turn it over to Mr. Livick for an update on that project, which is basically to remediate and clean up the site and eventually will lead to probably a project proposal for the site. But Mr. Livick, if you'd like to go ahead and give a review of what you're hearing from the project.
Yeah, that project is near complete, and you're correct. It was for removal of underground piping and storage tanks and some soil remediation around those facilities. The work appears to be complete, although we haven't been contacted by the contractor for a final inspection, and they'll be required to submit their APCD compliance reports to us, along with showing that they sign off from the health department that it's a clean site. We don't know what the future holds for that site, but I know their Chevron's real estate division is working on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Levick. A couple of other quick announcements. One is next week on September 16th, we're going to have our water reclamation facility, biosolids, and treatment systems presentation by one of our engineers and Mr. Mike Nunley. And that's going to be here at the Vets Hall, September 16th. That's Monday at 6 p.m. Open to anyone who's interested to attend. Mr. Nunley will be presenting options for biosolids handling and treatment systems, and then there'll be some discussion as well to identify maybe things that we should also consider or questions that we may have, and it's part of this ongoing process of looking at where we're going and ultimately leading to our October presentation to the Council of the Options Report and then moving forward pretty quickly from there. A couple of other quick events is the coastal cleanup, September 21st, that morning of the Avocado Margarita Festival, and the morning of the Hunger Walk. Sorry about that. And that's going to be pretty much countywide, and at all of the more popular beach sites, there will be a cleanup occurring, including in Morro Bay. We'll have Atascadero Beach Campground at Yerba Buena, Atascadero Road at the high school and the pit area, and then at Morro Rock, as well as the traditional ferry from the Morro Bay National Estuary Program crossing the estuary to the sand spit. And all of those cleanups start about 9 o'clock and go till around noon. They'll have the equipment that you need, but if you like to bring your own pair of gloves, that's always appreciated. And if you'd like to sign up for the ferry ride across the harbor to the sand spit with the estuary program, please call Catherine at 772-3834, and she's extension 13. So that's Saturday, September 21st, the statewide coastal cleanup. And we also, that same day, will have the Hunger Walk sponsored by San Luis County Food Bank, which is an annual event to raise funds and awareness and tations on Monday, September 30th. And that's going to be also here at the Vets Hall. And the doors will open at 5:15, and we'll be providing some more information about that as we get closer to the date. So thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, Noah. And I'll share a couple of my announcements as well. Let's see, on September 22nd from 12 to 3 in front of Ralph's in Los Osos, there's going to be a fundraiser barbecue. This is for Brad Cummins. Brad Cummins was the second cyclist involved in a tragic accident recently on Highway 1 in Morro Bay. He's currently up at Stanford Medical Center. The fundraiser will help the family with the expenses that they're incurring, and that's September 22nd in front of Ralph's at 12 to 3, so it would be great if some people could come out there and support for that effort. The other one I have is recently, last week, went to the SLOCOG meeting, and RTA just had the ribbon cutting for the new buses. So around, countywide, you'll see some new buses that are going around, newer, efficient, more comfortable, modern buses, and I think the customers and the bus riders for them will be more pleased and with all that. And then third and finally, congratulations to our newest firefighter, Micah Sapinski. That's a tough one to pronounce. He was sworn in on August 30th, so welcome to him. And that concludes our announcements, and we'll get on to public presentations. But we have a business spot. Excuse me, Jan, is our business spot here? Okay, Mr. Greaser from the Central Coast Seafood. Welcome.
Good evening. How are you all?
Great.
Okay. So I'm here to do a business spot for the Central California Seafood Marketing Association, a new startup in town that got rolling late last year and is participating in the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce's Business Incubator Program.
Can you state your name, please?
Sure.
Thank you.
John Greaser.
Thank you.
Yep. Established in October 2012, the Central California Seafood Marketing Association, CCSMA, is a nonprofit fishermen's cooperative marketing association based here in Morro Bay. Through the implementation and marketing of industry-leading fisheries co-management and on-the-water sustainability initiatives, CCSMA is bringing high-quality, locally harvested wild seafood to consumers, protecting the health and productivity of our fish stocks and habitat, and helping to stabilize fishery activity and businesses in Morro Bay. CCSMA's mission is to build value and security for our members, their local fishing operations, and their seafood products. We currently represent six small independent vessel owners and operators located in two historic fishing ports here in Morro Bay and in Half Moon Bay. Our fishermen all participate in the highly regulated West Coast Groundfish Trawl Catch Share Program and in the California Risk Pool. Last year, CCSMA fishermen harvested nearly 1.5 million pounds of groundfish in six main market categories, including black cod, sole of various kinds, rockfish of various kinds, thorny head, flatfish, and others. Our groundfish are caught using a variety of gear types, including trawl, long lighting, pots and traps, and Scottish seine. Our strategic goals include building a strong foundation for our association. Examples of that include participating in the In Morro Bay Chamber's incubator program. We're also developing strategic partnerships in Morro Bay and beyond. A second strategic goal includes building regional recognition, demand, and value for our association and member brands and products, developing a brand that emphasizes local, sustainable, and quality sourcing, as well as the story of our fishermen and their operations. We're developing innovative pilot projects and collaborative relationships with innovative businesses and new generation buyers and processors who value our brand and want our marketing support. I hope that next week many of you in this room will be able to purchase our product as a result of our collaboration with Slow Fresh Catch and with our processing provided by Central Coast Seafood in 6 San Luis Obispo County farmers markets. A third goal involves building mid- to long-term security in the fishery for current and prospective association members. Part of that is about our collaboration with the newly formed Morro Bay Community Quota Fund. Part of that is also about our participation in the California Risk Pool, where we are developing, along with sister ports up and down the California coast, where the Chamber of Commerce's incubator program is. My email address, which is the best way to contact me, is John, J-O-N, at wildcaliforniaseafood.org. Anything else? Thank you.
Thank you, John. Okay. Prior to going to public comment, if for those of you that have any presentations, if you could just coordinate with our HEP representative up there ahead of time, that'll make things move right along. We've got a pretty full agenda tonight. Also, for public comment, usually public comment is reserved for items not on the agenda. There are some other items that are later on in the agenda, so if you can't stay for some of those and you wish to speak on items that are on the agenda later tonight, if you just you have the opportunity to do that now, if you just state that during your public comment period. But the public comment that we'll be opening right now is currently open for items not on the agenda. So you have 3 minutes. Please state your name. Welcome.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members. My name is Robert Davis, and I live in Morro Bay. Excuse me. I'm speaking tonight as a representative of the San Luis Obispo Bicycle Club to tell you about our annual bicycling event that's coming to Morro Bay at the end of September. The bike club will host its 42nd annual Lighthouse Bike Ride for Charities on September 28th. That's the last Saturday of the month. We expect about 1,200 bicycle riders in town starting at 7 a.m. We tell them that we require all riders to ride safely, to observe traffic laws, to share the road with cars, and to respect local residents. The starting point is Morro Bay High School. Cyclists will exit the high school parking lot onto Atascadero Road, turn north onto Highway 1 and ride to the lighthouse and then back to Morro Bay. The course opens at 7 and closes at 5. Morro Bay Police will help to direct traffic around the high school in the morning, and CHP will patrol the route. Bicyclists will park at the high school or on Atascadero Road. We will not allow any riders to park at Lila Kaiser Park, and we are encouraging our riders to stay in Morro Bay motels and to ride their bikes to the starting point. The Lighthouse Bike Ride is one of our two annual fundraising events. We raise money to contribute to local nonprofit organizations and to support scholarships. This year we're donating almost $75,000 from our events to county schools and organizations. That includes donations to the Morro Bay Police Volunteers, to the Morro Bay 4th of July Committee, and a $2,000 donation to Morro Bay High School. In addition, the High School Booster Club is going to raise money by selling barbecue dinners to the bicyclists after they finish the ride. We try to work with local communities and law enforcement to make the ride safe for everyone and to minimize the impact. We ask that you help us by passing the word to your neighbors about the ride And you can get more information by calling the club at 543-5973. And please don't forget to support your local public library. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
Hi there. My name is Nicole Dorfman. This is my son Avery and Eli over there. I just want to briefly, I'd like to voice my support for a resolution that would enable Morro Bay to choose a larger percentage of renewable sources for our electric power. Excuse me. Please stop. I strongly believe that we need to keep moving away from being a society dependent on fossil fuels to being more reliant upon renewable energy, and anything that we can do as a community to move in that direction would be very welcomed. So thank you very much for considering that.
Thank you.
Thanks. Come on, boy.
need to capture that energy.
I should have brought my kids. John Solo, citizen of Morro Bay, president of this year's Harbor Festival. I'm here to show you for the first time an advertisement you probably see about 800 times before October 5th. So go ahead, start with that for me, please.
It's back, and bigger and better than ever, two incredible days of fun for everyone at the 32nd Annual Morro Bay Harbor Festival, October 5th through the 6th. Enjoy great seafood, wine, and beer, along with the clam chowder contest. Stop by Kids Cove for endless fun. Take a family photo at the amazing sand sculpture. Then head to the main stage for live performances by the Mother Hips, the Young Dubliners, Lakes, Tropo, Hot Butter Rum, and the return of Queen Nation, just to name a few. For tickets and more info to the Morro Bay Harbor Festival, October 5th through the 6th, log on at mbhf.com.
That could only be 30 seconds, so there's a lot of other things that we're doing. We're doing an oyster eating contest that's going to happen Saturday afternoon, so don't forget to come and attend that. So, George, this is the oyster or the avocado festival is not the last thing that's going to happen in before the summer's over. Hawaiian T-shirt contest that's going to happen on Sunday. That's sponsored by Bay News. To purchase advance tickets, it's still $8 in advance or $10 at the door. You can buy tickets at Albertsons. You can buy tickets at the office at 895 Napa Avenue, Suite A3. And there's a lot of changes. We're tightening up the event. We have a lot of enthusiastic volunteer board members. And with the leadership of Don Double D, I think we're going to have a great, successful event. With that, I just wanted to ask in regards to the fees. Panorama Street, and I like to know when the tourists use those streets, so they should be paying in repairing those streets. I'll leave you with that. Thank you very much, and have a nice meeting.
Thank you, John.
Hello, everybody. My name is Gary Johnson, a resident of Morro Bay. I want to talk about Dahlia Days, of which I have been involved due to my sweet wife and other people, but people keep asking me about the Dahlia. Well, let me regress here a little bit. The Dahlia is, of course, the Morro Bay flower. Back in the 60s and 70s, it was a big, big event. In one time, it's recorded in the newspaper clippings that we had over 10,000 people here one day with the parade. It was very, very successful. Then it slowly died away. Well, our great resident of Morro Bay, late Grace Melton, started to revive the Dahlia Days, and it started out at the museum in their courtyard. We had a handful of people, and that was about 10 years ago. Now it's fantastic. It's grown now to the community center. We've had hundreds of people come in. We had two great speakers. As Councilman Nancy Johnson got this award, it's just because of the effort that we have put into it. And another issue that really makes the community center very helpful to all of us is that the Park and Rec and other city employees that have been involved did a super, super job. They have a team in there that no matter what we wanted, they were there to help. And I'm talking they were there for most of the day into the evening. And when we shut down, they were there to help us. And I just can't appreciate that enough, because I know I've been in several conferences myself as general chairman. And the hotels, when you have a good staff, it goes smoothly. And this went smoothly, and I just want to give this city a thankful. Joe Woods, you got a good team. Pass the word to them that we appreciate everything they did. And also, the last I want to mention, the 50th year anniversary is coming up for Morro Bay. I need pictures, and if you could contact Nancy Johnson's at Councilman Nancy Johnson at 772-3738. Well, that's our phone too, my phone too. We live together. We need pictures. Louise Tucker has been fantastic. You cannot believe what she's been doing for us. And I appreciate some other people that have this the same amount of pictures and all of us. I was over to her place yesterday, and she's put hundreds of pictures together and news clippings in this. So we're going to make it very successful. Again, we need pictures. Please, please send it to us, because these pictures are going to be shown for the whole year. When it starts off, we're going to have posters and blah, blah, blah over the whole 50 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
Good evening. My name is Jan Crabb. Watson, excuse me. My comments are on D7 of today's agenda because I'm unable to stay.
Thank you.
I recommend that the board members of Morro Bay and other cities in Slo County vote no to join the Community Choice Aggregation Plan, or CCA, because we have a viable source of energy with the Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant, and now a solar plant in our county to supply our energy needs. And this is why. Individual cities in San Luis Obispo County are currently considering joining CCA Community Choice Aggregation. It's another term to boggle our minds. It is literally a power-controlling organization consisting of hydroelectric power, solar power, and wind power. This organization is formed to eventually eliminate all fossil fuels resources used for energy, such as natural gas, oil, coal, and also nuclear power. We consumers then must eventually become dependent only upon the wind, the hydro, and solar power for our energy needs. We are told that this plan will generate millions in savings to ratepayers by 2024, but this is only a projection, a mere speculation. They really don't know. With so many out of work, where will the tax money come from to pay for yet another program that has not been tested? We are overwhelmed with changes. This plan is just another program among many that are taking away our freedoms and are managing our lives by controlling our energy needs. Little by little, we people are losing freedoms of choice in America. Don't you feel this happening? If government entities can control our property rights, our food production, our water availability, and that street on the left by the red is Birch Street. So if you're going towards the east, you can see that there's a double yellow line beyond there, but it doesn't really take a lot into consideration about how you've got to make this jog to do that. Also, if you're going to turn on Birch, which I do a lot, just to kind of avoid all the other traffic, you're really sitting duck there with the traffic. That's seven possibilities in that intersection before there. So there's, if you're sitting there trying to turn left, it's really a dangerous situation. And I don't believe we should have parking there. There's lots of parking for that property on the side streets and on Alder and Birch. There's a lot of parking possibilities on both of those side streets. So I would like our traffic engineer to look at this again and get that parking off of there and realign the street back where it used to be so we don't go right into the oncoming traffic.
Also, I'd like to ask you all, did I read that on D5 that there's consideration of a district to pave streets in North Morro Bay? Did I misunderstand that? Anyway, if that is the case, I don't believe that's a good idea because North Morro Bay, we're just asking for our fair share of the paving budget. And so I don't think we should have to have a tax to have our streets repaired. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Linda.
Hello. I think I know most of you. My name is Lauren Leininger Avila. I'm the executive director for the American Red Cross here in San Luis Obispo County. This is my daughter, Michaela. I just wanted to kind of officially let you know that we're here. We've been in San Luis Obispo County since the 1880s, and we assist dozens of families that are affected by fires, floods, and other disasters that impact their ability to live in their homes, dozens every year. And I wanted to share with you our memorandum of understanding that we have with the California Emergency Management Agency, which is now called the Office of Emergency Services. And it basically outlines what our role is in a disaster situation, a larger disaster situation. Basically, it includes covering food, shelter, and emergency supplies, welfare information via the Safe and Well website, client casework and recovery planning and assistance, disaster health and mental health services, and we're also responsible for family care and mental health during aviation disasters. So I have for each of the council members and for Andrea a copy of the MOU. So I'll leave this with you guys. Thanks.
Thank you, Lauren.
Hello, my name is Linda Seely. I don't live in Morro Bay. I live in San Luis Obispo, but I'm a spokesperson for the San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace. And I'm here to talk about two things. One is Diablo Canyon. I have been in touch with the San Luis Obispo Chamber of Commerce, and they do not have any informational brochures available at their Chamber of Commerce about Diablo Canyon for tourists. And I know that Morro Bay, you rely on the tourism industry, I think, very much. And I would hope that you'll make it a point to make sure that there are brochures available at your Chamber of Commerce that describe emergency evacuation measures that would have to be taken in case of a release of radiation at Diablo Canyon. Also, I don't know in Morro Bay if you have signage on your hotel rooms, inside your hotel rooms, telling visitors to this area what to do in case there is a release of radiation while they're here. Most visitors who come to this area have no idea that there is a nuclear power plant within, 8-10 miles of Morro Bay. And I think it's incumbent upon your council to make sure that that public information gets out there. The other thing I would like to talk to you about is the CCA issue.
Good evening. I'm Dan Glessman, a citizen of Morro Bay. I want to thank you for having the opportunity to speak before I go home and get into my pajamas. I have a comment about D5. And speaking for myself, my friends, neighbors, we enjoy living in a city that provides quality services. Our police and fire departments are a good example. One defect that needs to be fixed is our streets. Streets are an expensive piece of infrastructure, and they project the health of a community to its residents and visitors. And I hope you recognize that we'll never get ahead of this problem without investing more than $900,000 a year consistently for at least 15 years. I think a better idea is to borrow $14 million, fix all our streets over a period of 2 years, This accelerated approach will allow Public Works Department to bargain for better pricing and delivery, so get more bang for our buck. Firstly, any new revenue source should have a sundown provision to terminate it when the loan is paid off. I suggest the most cost-effective revenue source is a 1/2 cent increase in our local sales tax. About half of our sales tax is paid for by non-residents. They should pay a share because they do drive on our streets also. I heard the staff was thinking of asking for a TOT tax increase of 1%. That would amount to about $200,000 a year. That's not enough to service a loan. Tourism is the key source of outside revenue for Morro Bay. Please recognize that Morro Bay serves the economy level of tourism. That means we're price sensitive. Do not make the mistake of increasing the TOT tax for increased potential revenue. Visitors see that number when they're making their decision on whether to stay in Morro Bay or elsewhere. If you damage tourism, you'll suffer the unintended consequence of having to reduce general fund monies for police and fire. Thank you and good evening.
Thank you, Mr. Glassman.
Hello.
There you
go. I'm Bonnie Crawford, and I live in Morro Bay, and I work in Morro Bay. My retirement job at Sweet Offerings Candy, Ice Cream, and Fudge Store, and I've seen some of you and some of you there, too, so I appreciate that. I'm here tonight to represent Jan Lewis, who was unable to attend. She's the owner of Sweet Offerings. She has a store in Canberra, you probably know, and she it's just opened. We're the new kids on the block. We've been there 1 month. And she has purchased a home in Morro Bay, and she's moving to Morro Bay. And she has invested literally hundreds of thousands of dollars in this wonderful store. And she's very invested in the community and has supported many of the functions already that have taken place and is already committed to sponsor a number of other ones. I know that the city is anxious to make themselves avail or have available the public access bathroom at the corner of Morro Bay Boulevard and Main Street. And so I'm addressing item D3 on your recommendations, asking you to consider the fact that one block away is a brand new business who's trying to establish themselves also in the treat business. We serve ice cream, Doc Bernstein's ice cream. I believe they plan to serve frozen yogurt. So I would ask you to consider that you have a business that's trying to get started and that that would considerably impact that business. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Nancy Castle, plenipotentiary with portfolio. Tonight I'm talking about St. Peter's Church. We're going to have a barbecue and a concert this weekend on Saturday. The barbecue is going to be served from 2 to 6, and in the evening, Morro Bay's homeboy Jody Mulgrew will be singing with his good bud Gary Garrett. When they sing together in other locations, they do manage to sound like two or three or four people. I think in the church, they're going to sound like a full choir. This is one of Jody's last stops before he heads to Nashville, where he's going to become a Nashville cat. And maybe after 30 years of being raised here, he'll be an overnight sensation and we'll share him with the rest of the world. However, you'll have a chance to see him at St. Peter's by the Sea, the Episcopal Church. It's 545 Shasta Street. We'll have a barbecue from 2 to 6, and you can come and eat and then go to the concert at 7 o'clock, and it would be wonderful to see you all there. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Anybody else for public comment?
Climate change and even possibly keep the money local for our local renewable energy sources. So I see it as a real win, and that this would just be the beginning stage of allowing this group to go forward to get the information. But of course, we need you guys to vote to allow this group to get the information, and then of course, it all goes back to you guys, and it's it's not a done deal. It's all about voting and understanding what this is all about. But we first need you guys to be able to say, yes, let's go for this. Let's check it out. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Public comment is still open. Welcome.
Hello. My name is Taylor Newton. I live here in Morro Bay. And I just wanted to quickly thank Nancy Johnson and Jan Goldman for involving the Gorilla Gardening Club, which I work with, in their Dahlia Days event this weekend. We really enjoyed ourselves, and I truly believe it's one of our special events in Morro Bay. So thank you, Nancy.
Phil Kaspersky, Morro Bay. I told you 2 weeks ago I wouldn't come back for 2 years. I apologize. I was present for the CCA's, or the solicitation for the CCA, and I've done a little bit of research. I've done a little bit of reading. I just want to say I don't believe it's the government's place to make these choices for us. Now, I understand I've been crushing cans and recycling bottles and riding my bicycle for 50 years. You know, I like to think I live sensibly. I like to think I take care of my own surroundings, and I try not to waste things. I walk when I can. I ride my bike when I can, and I don't waste when I can. But I don't think when it comes time for me to do solar energy on my house, that will be my choice. I don't think that people want to be put in a situation where they feel the government is making those decisions for them. We're all born free, and that's the way I'd like to feel like I live. I also would like to remind everybody, I've been through the years I've lived in this area, a number of very intense storms, and I'd like you all to think back about all of the wonderful PG&E employees who have stood up, gone out in the middle of some pretty lousy weather and done some pretty miraculous things to keep the power on in our homes. Those are wonderful employees who have contributed to our community tremendously as well as financially, and slowly but surely that industry is kind of dying, and I think we're encouraging that industry to go away. If, and I believe in solar energy, and I believe that perhaps these wave generation techniques will come of age, but if that's to happen, let them stand on their own. I don't think the city needs to come up and make those decisions or put those decisions out. I'm in an industry where we're very competitive. 10 years ago, we were much more successful than we are now because, gee, there was a lot of work around, but it's very, very, very competitive right now. It's much, much more difficult, and I think that every industry ought to earn its way into this. If the technology is good, if you build it and people want it, they will come. And I understand, you know, there's a lot of heart going into this, and I want to see good decisions made, and I want my city council to think very hard and not just put their citizens into a situation where they really are not being given choices. PG&E should participate in this as well. If there are better choices, they'll surface, and we'll make those decisions. And one thing I didn't say when I was here 2 weeks ago, I want to thank you all because I know how hard each of you work and how much time you spend. It's way above and beyond what you need to offer, but you do, and I'd like to thank you. I apologize for not doing that last time. Thanks for allowing
thank
me to speak.
Thank you for your time. Thank you. Public comment is still open. Welcome.
Good evening. Christine Rogers, a resident of Morro Bay and a representative for the Economic Vitality Corporation. Since we're talking about energy this evening, I did want to share an exciting new program that the EVC is partnering with the Community Environmental Council of Santa Barbara on. For a short period, we are offering a group purchasing program for residential solar systems. The primary benefit, in addition, obviously, to stimulating our green energy industry and creating jobs, is that residential property owners can purchase a solar system at a competitive price. The two contractors that were selected through a comprehensive vetting process. So experts did take a look at their reputations, the solvency of those companies, their, you know, historical customer service, as well as the quality of those solar panels and those systems. And in addition to that, the Community Environmental Council offers an unbiased resource to answer questions questions for property owners on things such as financing, what type of system they should purchase, you know, any other
concerns about the intersection at Alderham Birch and San Jacinto. I know he's been working on it, and I bet he wants to share some things.
Yes, we are looking at a couple alternatives that for restriping of that intersection there, that block there. So we'll be evaluating those and moving forward with the optimal solution. We kind of have an ad hoc committee that'll help us make that decision. So look forward. Since that picture was taken, there are guidelines between the block to line up the stripes, and you know it is a 25 mile an hour speed limit, so I hope people are driving slow enough not to drive into oncoming traffic and can keep on their side of the street.
Okay, so I would just like to follow up a little bit on that. So that definitely I would like to send the message back to those in that community. I think it is causing a lot of conversation in not just in North Morro Bay, because many people come up to North Morro Bay, especially to go to the school or to commute here and there. So Noah Smuckler and I and Chief Amy Christie and Mr. Livick and Mr. Sauerwine were there about 6 days ago working on that project and making sure that we can meet the needs of everyone in there. And it really isn't about the school. It's really about everyone who commutes on San Jacinto, bike, pedestrians, and cars. And please know we're working on it, and it's not the end. So it's not quite, I don't believe it's quite finished, potentially. Would you agree, Mr. Levick?
I would guess that it's not finished.
Yes, I would guess that too. How's that for a political answer? Thank you.
All right, thank you. I'll look to my right, Nancy.
I too wanted to put Mr. Levick on the spotlight for a minute. Mr. Glessman's comments about streets and securing a loan, I really liked the idea of actually having more money to actually get somebody here to do a major amount of work. Do you suppose that's something that we might be discussing more specifically when we get to the sales tax issue or the tax issue?
I don't know if we'll get into those details, but we could possibly, you know, look at those items. I don't know that doing a $14 million project or a $2.7 million project is for paving is going to be a realistic size. We might have to break it up into a little bit smaller chunks than that. That would be a very large paving program for Morro Bay. I would suggest something, $2 to $5 million per year rather than trying to do $7 or $15 or $20 million. You know, I think we have 56 road miles in town, mm-hmm. and to do all those, mm-hmm. it's somewhere around $40 million if we wanted to bring everything up to brand new right now. So yeah, it's going to take a lot of work to do that.
Well, I was just remembering, was it just last year, our paving project that had all kinds of issues and problems, and my understanding was sort of because it really wasn't a big enough project for the people who did it. They went off and did something else, and things got kind of stalled. So it may not be $14 million, but at least doing something sizable enough to keep the paving companies here to get it done. I don't know if that's realistic or not.
Yeah, I think doing a bigger job is better, but we just don't want to get it so large that realistically, if we tried to do everything at once, you might not be able to drive around town very effectively. So we still need to have commerce going on here, too. So thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Noah? No comments? I'm just going to put one or two of you on the spot. I know there's one comment about the hotel signage as far as emergency information. Isn't there something like that? Chief Knuckles, would you know about something like that? Putting you on the spot. We're passing it around.
Thanks. And I'm known, but I will check into that.
Okay.
But I think that is a requirement of all local hotels and residentials.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Yeah. With that, I don't think we have any more comments. And Considering the evening, we could take a quick five-minute break. We have a pretty full agenda, and let's keep it to 5 minutes, and then we can come back and start with the consent agenda and then move on. Would everybody agree with that so far? Or would you like to knock out? We can knock out the consent agenda real quick, actually. Are there any comments on consent?
Let's
do consent. Okay. I'll look to my left. Any comment or anybody want to pull anything on consent? Okay. Seeing none, do I have a motion?
Move approval of A1 and A2.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion. But I know people are here to speak about the sales tax initiative, D5, but I wanted to swap D5 and D6 with the pavement management plan. I think there's discussion there that kind of rolls into the tax initiative and really how we got started on the sales tax initiative to begin with. So I would just ask for some support from council to move item D6 into item ahead of item D5. So it would be just swapping item D6 and item D5 and swapping that. Do I have support for that?
Yes.
I'm seeing a nod and a okay to my left. How about to my right? I'm seeing okay. All right, thank you for that. So when we get to those items, we're going to be swapping those. And with that, we can get on to item D1. And D1 is item C1. Thank you for that. Item C1 is status report of the major maintenance and repair plan for the existing wastewater treatment plant, and that would be Mr. Livick.
Thank you, Ms. Mayor, City Council. This item has traditionally been on our consent agenda, but we pulled it off for to give a briefing on this. So this is our MMRP, or Major Maintenance and Maintenance and Repair Program for the existing wastewater treatment plant. Try not to use too many abbreviations in there and slow down a little bit. This program is to facilitate the maintenance at our existing treatment plant until we can bring our new water reclamation facility on board and still maintain our high-quality effluent from our existing plant and maintain operations there. We started this program back at the beginning of this year. And went through the budget, identified some projects that we'll be working on. Recently, we've entered into a couple of consulting contracts with Mike Nunley and Associates of San Luis Obispo and Black & Veatch of pretty much worldwide to provide some assistance on the MMRP with non-destructive testing, selection of equipment, and some design and preparation of specifications for these repair projects for this budget year. The three repair projects that we'll be working on this year are replacement of our influent screens at the headworks of the plant. So influent screens remove those things in wastewater that probably don't belong there in the first place. And I'm going to put a little plug in that we've had in our utility newsletter about just because it says flushable on the label doesn't mean it should be flushed. So those Swiffers and really the makeup wipes, they're kind of a random fiber wipe product. They tend to clog pumps, get wrapped around impellers, develop these giant rag balls, clog up the works, so to speak. If anybody desires to see what a rag ball in wastewater looks like, you can come down and visit Bruce anytime. He'll pull a rag ball for you. Or maybe you can help pull a rag ball. Okay, sorry about that.
Moving on.
The next project is kind of at the other end of the plant, and that's to disinfect the wastewater before it goes out the door and out into the ocean, and repairs to our chlorine contact tank so we maintain good disinfection of our effluent. And then there's some on the solid side of the process, we need to clean and inspect and potentially repair digester number two. We have three anaerobic digesters at the plant that they take the solids and further reduce their volatility and make them more disposable. So those are our three projects that we'll be working on with the assistance of Nunley and Associates in Black and Veatch. With that concludes my staff report, and I'll be happy to answer any questions or bring a rag ball next time, maybe.
All right, thank you for that report. I'll look to my left for any questions. George, Christine?
I don't have any questions. I might have some comments here later.
All right, thank you. Christine?
I just have a quick question, Mr. Levick. How often are you going to revisit the MMRP, just for the public? How often is this going to be revised and revisited in the next 2 years?
So this is part of the annual budgeting process. So we'll bring projects forward, like the influence screens. I don't think we can buy influence screens that only last 5 years. We're buying a new piece of equipment, so it will have a longer life than the life of the treatment plant. Of course, it will also have a salvage value at the end of that when we're decommissioning the plant. So the contractor, or depends how we set up the contract, there'll be some value to that on the surplus market. They can be sold to another treatment plant. We've looked at that options of buying used equipment. We just can't find any that fit our needs.
Okay, thank you very much.
Nancy? No. None? Noah?
Thank you. Mr. Levick, I was glad to hear you mention and say that it's clear from the council side and from Cayucas that we want to minimize the investment in the plants to limit any expenditures that aren't necessary to get us through till we have the new plan online. I did want to ask you about the chemical storage shed component, which is a real modest side of this, estimated at about $40,000. Is that part of this year's plan? I don't see it listed in here. Are we thinking we're going to address that later?
No, that's part of this year's, but it's just not one of the real larger projects. These projects here are in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. The chlorine storage building is about a $40,000 job, was its estimate. It probably will come in at less than that with re-roofing and putting a couple of walls up to enclose that building so we can move storage out of our maintenance building and store equipment in there and allow our maintenance building to use for maintenance on pumps so we're not storing stuff in there. So that project is needed to move forward. There really isn't a good temporary measure.
Can I ask if you did look at, because the household hazardous waste facility is utilizing a ventilated pod type unit that's very temporary and easily moved and still retains value. So I was curious to know if that was something that we could consider as well.
I think we could frame up and re-roof an existing structure cheaper than we can buy a pod that would be large enough for what we need there, because it's already has walls on two and a half sides of it, so it's really just enclosing that building. It's not a huge work effort there.
Those are my questions.
Okay, thanks. The questions I have are I'm curious on the amount of time that's required by staff for this MMRP, and I'll go back to our initial meeting at the very beginning of the year with the JPA, and there was some conversation about whether or not we would consult the MMRP out 100% or do it kind of in a phasing joint relationship where we did it in-house and then got some consultants to help us with this. So I wanted to talk about that specific to considering all the other priorities and all the other work that we have going on. Where are we with our consult work on our MMRP, and is this the MMRP becoming a restriction for other staff work and priorities?
Well, regardless of how much consultant time we invest in this project, we'll always have staff time on it because there has to be some oversight. There's with the beginning of a new program, there's always more staff time until your consultant team gets on board. We'll be transitioning into Black & Veatch and Mike Nunley doing the heavy lifting on this project and staff doing the review of this project. So I don't have exact numbers for staff hours on the MMRP with me tonight, but I would say just off the top of my head, we might have between all the staff that works on little pieces of it, maybe, you know, 1.5 full-time people working on this during the startup of it, and we'll probably reduce that down to a half man or person time as the consultants come up to speed.
Yeah, and you know, I trust you on that. My question just was to the effect that is this becoming an overload for staff on other priorities, even though, you know, and I understand that there's going to be some staff time and oversight, as you explained. I just want to ensure that moving forward, have we reached that limit to where we really have to maintain this from a consultant's perspective to keep moving along?
I don't believe that we're overloaded with this project. We would be the first ones to come to Ms. Luker and ask for help if we needed that help, because we don't want to see failure on any of our high-priority projects. Luckily, we have a couple of different disciplines in the division that are working on different things that are also council priorities, so we can kind of spread that wealth, that work effort.
Correct.
And everybody's happy to be working.
All these new rates that's going to be coming up, and what and they're just asking questions. What will it take to put this to secondary? How much money would it take? How long would this plant last after it was brought up? How much money would we have to really be put into this plant to keep our sewer rates low? There's a lot of people concerned about this. So this is kind of a comment and a question. Do we have any idea? There's even talk about maybe bringing this to the people and find out what they want.
Mr. Levitt?
I know, it's a nasty thing.
Well, staff works out based on council direction, and council direction right now is to work on a new water reclamation facility at another location. To have a wastewater treatment plant at the current facility that would meet secondary effluent requirements would require that we build something. We would have to build a new structure there, which requires a coastal development permit. While we're in the appeals jurisdiction, we would issue one ourselves if Planning Commission and City Council did. I can say this with 100% guarantee that would be appealed to Coastal Commission, either by Coastal themselves or by another person. We saw what success we had with Coastal last time, trying to build something in an area they don't believe is suitable for this high industrial use, so in close proximity to a wave run-up area. So I don't believe that this site, without constructing new facilities on there, can meet secondary requirements.
Okay, you're telling me that this plant cannot be brought to secondary at all, even though that I've talked to other people and they said it can be. So I was just clarifying this.
I'm not saying it can't be, but we need to build another secondary clarifier, because our existing secondary clarifier is at capacity and we only have one of them. We have two of most everything else, but we only have one secondary clarifier because of our permit type. We didn't need to have two secondary clarifiers. So we need another secondary clarifier at that existing site to meet permit, we anticipate our new permit limits to be.
And we're kind of moving into the topic of our wastewater treatment plant discussion, so beyond the MMRP. So unless there's some other questions.
No, thank you for that.
Thanks. Thanks for the questions, George. Moving along, if there's no other questions, then
well,
at this
actually,
point.
I just wanted to thank Mr. Leek and Mr. Levick for that dialogue, because I have also heard a number of comments regarding that, and I think it's important for the community to understand, and also to look at what we're trying to do is develop a facility that's going to satisfy the community's needs into the future. And in that case, where we would be, even if we were allowed to get permits from Coastal, which is unlikely or impossible, we would be throwing money into a situation that ultimately wouldn't carry us in as far to the future as we're going to need. So thank you for your information.
Great closure. All right. Thank you. With that, we'll receive and file our MMRP and move on to item D1. D1 is review of the Economic Development Program and associated scope of work. Ms. Luker.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council. The Chamber of Commerce entered into an agreement with the City of Morro Bay to offer economic development services for the city. We signed a contract. The city signed a contract with the Chamber, and we've attached that contract to your staff report. Within that contract is a section, I think it's Section 1 or Section 2, that really describes the use of the funds for economic development. And what we've done, I'll actually go backwards. In addition, when we awarded this contract, the Chamber also included a scope of a work for economic development. And those both those documents are attached to your staff report. In recent weeks, as you're aware, there have been some staffing changes at the Chamber in terms of economic development. And there was, as a result, at your last meeting, the Council asked for this item to come back, and we've provided it for you this evening. I will tell you that, and you've probably noticed, that Chamber of Commerce CEO Craig Schmidt is here tonight, and he's prepared to talk a little bit about the contract and how he's meeting the terms and conditions of this contract. Brief staff report. I'll turn it back over to you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thanks. And just briefly before I ask for questions here, you know, we did agendize this to come back and recognize some of the changes that were going on. I thought it would be a great opportunity to bring this out and discuss some of the changes.
The Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce developed a business incubator accelerator. The program provides subsidized office space, office equipment and supplies, support and access to resources and business counseling for startup businesses. I think everyone's aware of some of the great programs, partners in this program, including the Economic Vitality Corporation, the Business and Entrepreneurship Center at Cuesta College, Mission Community Services, and Cal Poly. CCSMA was fortunate enough to be introduced to the program and concept in advance of its implementation and has served the coveted role of guinea pig. We moved into the Morro Bay Chamber of Commerce offices at 695 Harbor Street in May and have the brightest and most well-decorated office in the building. Lisa, Hank, Craig, and John were and have all been super helpful in preparing the office space, getting it set up with furniture, and enabling me and my team to transition smoothly from my home office so I could get to work quickly. I can't tell you how much I appreciate the renovations and how I utilize the conference room, printer and AV equipment, kitchen, and other shared facilities. As a result of initial water damage as well as our extensive investment in the office space, we've also been lucky enough to not have paid rent yet, a value that cannot be overstated for a cash-strapped startup. I'm also now beginning to tap into all of the other resources that I aforementioned and partners that are a part of this program. I'm working closely with Craig not only to formalize CCSMA's agreement with the Chamber and with the program, but also to develop some sort of a summary document that can be used to describe and further develop the program in greater detail and to market it to future and prospective tenants. Finally, I'm working with Craig on an additional economic development idea of my own related to what happens to incubated businesses once they graduate, if that's a word I can use, from the incubator program along the lines of a thematic cluster. I'm not going to share any more of that super secret idea with you until it's further developed. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any others for public comment?
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. My name is Susan Stewart. I'm a resident of Morro Bay, a business owner in town, and current president of the Chamber of Commerce. First off, I would like to say that we are fully supportive of our CEO, Craig Schmidt, and excited about the future of our town. The decision by city leaders in both this council and the previous one that an economic and business development program is an important goal for the community demonstrated insight and recognition that a strong local economy must be nurtured and supported at a civic level. The city has partnered with the Morro Bay Chamber to create an economic and business development program, including information and data gathering, business support and recruitment, and incubator programs, which we heard some exciting stuff about, with the goal of helping to create a stronger and more diverse and vibrant economy in Morro Bay. As a coalition of business leaders, the Chamber Board believes strongly in the work of this program and fully supports the efforts of CEO Craig Schmidt to provide the resources and expertise to make this a viable program and to make Morro Bay a better place to do business in. We believe this is an investment in our community, a logical relationship, and an opportunity to provide organized business outreach, support, and recruitment. The resources and relationships of the Chamber allow this program to be bigger and further reaching than it would be as a standalone program. I recently read the following quote, "If you are exploring new territory, you need stable bridges." Mr. Schmidt has created these bridges for other communities and continues to build them in our community. This program has the potential to not only build bridges, but help pave our roads. I'm reminded of another bridge quote, this one from Isaac Newton, "We build too many walls and not enough bridges." Let's keep the program moving forward. Thank you.
Thanks, Susan. Any others for public comment? Seeing none, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council. And I'll start to my right this time for comments.
Yeah, actually, I wouldn't mind giving Mr. Schmidt a chance to make some comments himself.
Sure. Anybody? You're okay? Okay, Mr. Schmidt, thanks.
Good evening, everybody, and thanks for the opportunity to be here before you again today. Our goals still remain the same as outlined in our original proposal and contract. Our first phase of gathering information and data useful to the current business community and potential new businesses coming was completed. Community and the entrepreneurial development component that John Greaser spoke so well about. We're lucky to have John as our guinea pig. He's been a great guinea pig, very clean, very quiet, but he's also added a lot of insight. He attended another incubator program, so he's able to tell me what benefits he got and didn't get from that program so that we can build our program to be more efficient and more beneficial to our other guinea pigs that we bring in. I can go through the list of things that we've done with regards to business retention or recruitment or entrepreneurial development, or I can answer any questions that you have. How would you like me to proceed?
We'll go with questions. I'll look to my council and see if they have any questions for you on that.
Okay.
To my right.
Yes, thank you. And Mr. Craig Schmidt, would you mind...
Mr. Noah Craig. Smuckler.
would you mind talking a little bit about the shop local concept that you're working on and how well you're developing that with the
Tourism
Bureau?
Actually, I'm really excited about this program, and Councilmember Christine Johnson is a member of that group, as is Susan Stewart, myself, Janice Peters, and Karen Moss. This is going to be a joint project between the Tourism Bureau and the Chamber of Commerce working hand in hand to develop a Shop Morro Bay program. And it has four different components focusing on four different retail areas of the community: Quintana, North Morro Bay, the Embarcadero, and the downtown area. So each area will have its own event that creates an awareness of the shops that are in that area to our local people. So that kickoff should probably come at the end of October, and I'll have more information for you. One of the things that we're firming up now is having a diner round, which is a restaurant progressive dinner in North Morro Bay, and Beach House Bistro has been sort of an advisor with us on that, so we're really excited about that. We're talking about doing a Christmas tree walk through downtown. And the merchants will be talking with them tomorrow morning about purchasing Christmas trees and decorating them and putting them outside their business. And then we're talking about expanding on the offerings for the Lighted Boat Parade, which is December 7th.
To confirm, you do have one space still available within the incubator for anyone that might be interested?
I have one coming open. I have one and a half. Fishline is there part-time, but they're not there full-time. We're trying to get them to make a full commitment or not, so we know on the availability of that. Fishline has come to us with a proposal to do a Morro Bay mobile app, and we're still looking at funding opportunities to cover for that plan if that's something we want to proceed with.
And then my last question is, to what extent are you able or finding access to, as you're looking at businesses and the locations, are you able to get access and with our planning departments? Is there a relationship there?
I'd give Rob a kiss on the forehead if we weren't on TV. His staff, I know his staff is worked to the max, and everybody that has gone into planning commission with either myself or John DiNunzio have come out and say, this was a great experience. I want to be in Morro Bay if we can make it work.
Okay, thank you.
So thank you, Rob. Pass it on.
Nancy, any questions?
I have a few. I kind of like to get down to real numbers and specifics. Mm-hmm. And I noticed John Greaser talked about the referrals to EVC, to the Center at Quest, and to Cal Poly. Can you give me a number of how many people or how many businesses you've referred to each of these?
To each of them?
Yes.
EVC has met on a monthly basis, and I say maybe out of the 88 visits that we've done assistance to, maybe 8 or 9 have gone through EVC.
Cuesta,
we have a contract with Israel that we have not made use of. That's the next phase that we're going into. And who else was on that?
Cal Poly.
Mission Community Service has had a changeover. David Rial is no longer there, and he was my contact person, so we're reestablishing relationship with that.
Okay, how about at Cal Poly?
Well,
have you referred
Cal Poly,
people?
They've been very helpful with regards to the hothouse that they've developed, and we are using their documents to assist us in bettering our incubator program. So they've been very helpful.
Now, he mentioned rent that he hasn't had to pay yet. Is
right.
there a sliding scale, or what's the rate for new businesses?
The first year, we were going to charge $200 a month because we were so impacted by the great flood of 2013. It was difficult to come into full operations. And then John Greaser also invested in putting a wood floor in his office out of his own money, so we waived his first month's rent of October.
And then is that our phone and copy services and things like that in addition to that, or are those included?
They are included. Copies are extra, and they sign on the board the copies.
Those have been sent out or given
to
people?
It hasn't been finalized yet.
Oh, it's not finished?
No. It should be finished by the end of next week or the week after that.
Can you elaborate on the information packet?
It contains a letter from you introducing Morro Bay to potential businesses coming in the area and letting them know that we're a business-friendly area. It contains demographics, traffic counts that businesses want to know when they locate. It gives them information on the commercial property inventory and how to access that. What else is on there? And then a list of our partners and how to contact them, contact information for our partners.
That brings up one last question. So with your partners, do you make the initial contact, or do people who want to open a business, do they go out and make their own contact with the partners?
It depends on the circumstance. We also have created a local Morro Bay business coaching team of experts in the area of finance, marketing, management. I am looking for somebody in technical and social media, so if anybody out there has that expertise and is willing to donate their time to help startup businesses, we're looking for them. So that's our first layer of contact. If we need to move beyond that to our partners, we have that availability.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Good questions. George? Christine?
Yes, thank you very much. Sorry, I was reviewing my notes. I just had a quick question going back to
the incubator program for a moment. And I, if you don't know the details, I don't expect you to because it's not our city, but do you happen to know broadly what the city of San Luis Obispo commits to their hothouse program?
I'm sorry, I do not. I know the space is donated.
Okay. So thank you. But the space, so they're giving
I can't find that out.
They have the, so they're providing the space for the incubators.
The space was donated, to my understanding, and that was extended. So the operating costs, I'm not sure what those are. I can find out for you this week.
And do you know if there are any, and I remember we talked about this a few months ago, perhaps it was even prior to me being on the council, but other than the city of San Luis Obispo, are there any other incubator programs in our county?
Not that I know of. My partners in the SLO chamber executives, there's none in those communities of Paso. North County is trying to put an economic development program together, but I do not believe they have an incubator program.
Okay. And their chamber executive is moving on, so
yes,
maybe they're not going to get to that quite yet.
We'll miss him. He was a good guy.
Okay. So I, from the report, I just wanted to point out, and I'm sorry it's a bit slow for me to page back and forth. It is on page 39 of the report for us up here, and it's the under focus on outcome reporting, and it is the third paragraph, and it states that clear monthly reporting on increased sales tax and new startups and businesses attracted or retained will be the primary reporting focus. So I think tonight we've been able to get a lot of information about the incubator business, which I do appreciate,
mm-hmm.
because I don't think we've really known in the community what Mr. Greaser has been doing, and I think it's really important to get that information out, and that it may also be a good recruitment tool for us. And I also I recognize in your materials that the incubator programs that are up and running, and it's not like it's really the first place in the world where they exist. They do exist other places.
No, actually, the director of Cal Poly's Hot House is internationally known for her work in the Incubator Association.
Right, so I think it's good for us to be affiliated closely with a program like that mm-hmm. that's doing so well. And then I think also that you state in the staff report, and I think it's worth mentioning that the incubator business, it's not supposed to go into fill a large commercial space in the first 6 months.
Right.
And it is talking to us about, for the incubator, we have to see where things develop a little bit over time, and it does correlate. Their success may very well correlate to having some upfront costs covered by a sponsor or another organization.
These startups would not be able to move forward without that opportunity.
So I think it's interesting and exciting for Morro Bay to have it. And then I think where I am feeling a little bit, again, like it's good to hear that information and for the community to hear it about the incubator program. And if I think it would be good to get out a little information, too, about the work that has been done on filling some of the empty commercial spaces. And maybe you could address, if you're comfortable doing that, the space where Bob's Big Boy was.
Well, actually, that's one of the businesses. We're not specifically going after filling one particular property. We're trying to put the materials together so we can represent all the vacancies in town and all the property owners that have vacancies. We look through the list, and we also look through the national list of businesses that are looking to relocate. We have that information, so we will send packets to those businesses that may want to have a franchise or a satellite office in Morro Bay.
Ability. And to ignore that, I think, would mean that we are just not supportive of economic development. So I think having this today is more of a to show that we are supportive of that. Mm-hmm. And I think really the way this came out, actually even better than our presentation, the quarterly report that you presented. So I think it was very informative,
well,
very helpful
you.
For us, and I think helpful for the community that, you know, is, wants to know how the city's investing their money in economic development. So, you know, I would just say thanks for that.
And, and I'd like to apologize for the way the word got out, because it got out before I had an opportunity to contact everyone.
Yeah.
So that was unfortunate. But I think you all know my passion for this program. And my board of directors supports this program 100%. So we appreciate the partnership that we have with the city and the foresight that they have to support this program. And we want to make it work for all of Morro Bay.
Great.
Thank you, Craig.
All right, everybody. Thanks for everybody's comment. Craig, Susan, everybody for coming out and all the questions. Appreciate that. We can move on from D1.
I have a comment about D1 before we move on.
Okay.
I know before I had questions. And you need to know that I'm a really strong supporter of this program, and I am hoping that it will move forward and really do all the things and build bridges and all the things that we're hoping for. In that light, I would like to recommend just a brief monthly report from Mr. Schmidt when he talks about business retention and recruitment, information packets that are almost ready, a couple of the like referrals. I'd like him maybe just to come back on a monthly basis and give us just a real quick numbers, how many packets have gone out, how many actual interactions have they had with business, potential business. Just real quick and not, you know, terribly detailed, but just some numbers. I'm really stuck on numbers here. I'm sorry about that. But just once a month for a while until we see where we're going with all these wonderful ideas.
Okay. Any other comments to that?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. I think that's an interesting idea. I'd want to make sure that the report is simple so that it's not a big time sink to generate. But I think that will help us stay aware of what is occurring and give Mr. Schmidt the opportunity to communicate to us if there are things that need assistance from the city. And also, I think it works towards making sure that the performance is there so that we get back into the budget cycle, we're able to justify and answer those questions about what's happening with the city funds. So I think that will help.
Great. I think that we get a thumbs up out there for that. Thank you. All right. Great. Then we'll move on. Thanks for all the comments. That moves us into item D2. Item D2 is a discussion of a volunteer budget review committee, and this is Ms. Susan Slayton. Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor Irons and council members. As council requested, the item before you is the concept of a volunteer budget review subcommittee. Staff has included examples from other cities who installed their committees to resolve budget deficiencies and gain public input into their budget process. Staff feels that we provide many avenues for public input and receive valuable input from the community without the added layer of a subcommittee. But staff is requesting the City Council to either table this item or ask the staff to bring back a policy to establish a subcommittee. And this concludes my report, Mayor Irons, and thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Slayton. Questions for Ms. Slayton? I'll look to my right. Nancy? How about Noah? Do you have any questions? George, questions? Christine? I'll lead off with some questions. In your staff report, I'm looking at the... I'll just go right to some of my questions on this. It's basically the benefits versus... The time for staff that you point out. So tell me what you feel the benefits are, because in our staff report it just says, hey, there is benefits and then there's going to be some time constraints, I guess, with this. So I would like to hear from you what the benefits, you feel the benefits are.
Some of the benefits that I think that we could gain would be a little bit, well, and it would all depend on the makeup of the committee. But if we were to involve more financial people from the community, I think the better.
And so thank you for that. And how about the concern, staff time? You said it refers to staff time and projects. You have some concern there.
There again, that would all depend on the makeup of the committee, and it would also depend on what council's expectations were. So if council was anticipating that the budget review committee would meet with staff and we would go through the process of, reviewing the budget, then come back and then do budget workshops additionally, that's going to require staff to back the budget process up and start it much earlier than the year than we would normally do it, because we really truly want to get the budget passed in June. So in order to do that, I have to have a document to you in May, and we have to be able to start our budget workshops the end of May, beginning of June. So if we're going to add in the extra layer, I've got to be able to have worked with these people in March and April, because they're going to need some training. Very few people that are out in the community today, unless they've worked for a government, they don't usually understand governmental accounting. It's very strange. So that would be
a benefit in of itself.
It absolutely can, because it gives you an opportunity to train the public, to explain things to them. But again, like I said, it just means backing things up. It would interfere with the timing of the goal setting process. And if we back it up too much, then we're getting into less confidence in the numbers that we're going to initially promote, because we don't have as much history behind us. We're only looking at maybe 4 to 5 months worth of history of how the year is performed, as opposed to looking at 6 and 7 months.
Okay. And then one final question. In the staff report, under discussion, Moore Bay is on solid financial footing, and which is good news. But when I go to item D5, and we're talking about a tax initiative, it's also states that Moore Bay has been in a difficult financial position for a number of years. So we have some conflicting statements in two different staff reports. Could you comment on that?
Yes. For a number of years, the city of Morro Bay had a structural deficit that was related to the Dynegy money. And we had a $500,000, an agreement of money that had a sunset date. And we were very concerned about that. We spent a great deal of time working that down through our budget to where next year our budget will be structurally sound. We will be only dependent on our ongoing revenues to cover our ongoing expenses. We will not have any anomaly in our budget that we have relied on. So when I say that we've been struggling for years, we have. We struggled through the recession, through California's recession. Well, actually, the world's recession in many ways. But we struggled through that. We made it. And we managed to still continue to crack away at this $500,000 so that we could get it down. We've reduced our staff to some pretty record low numbers. And I believe that next year we are in a position where we are in a very, very good, sound structural position. Do we have difficulties to face? Yes, we do. But we're not relying on money that we don't have. We're not relying on money that could potentially go away. It's ongoing revenues. And you know I'm a very, very conservative budgeter, so I'm not going to jump out there, and I'm not going to budget $2.2 million for TOT, even though I know it's performing that way, because if it doesn't, I don't think that I would be here the next year to put that little budget together. So, but yes, we do have difficulties that are coming.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Luker, did you have a comment? Yeah, I got the eyeball.
Thank you.
The
I appreciate that. There. I want to make sure there is a second part. Thank you, Ms. Layton. That was an excellent answer. I do want to remind the council of the second part of that paragraph, though, and then where we do talk about the importance of our future projections that we've made and the importance of revenue measures and such, and those are on the agenda tonight. We were very aware when we were writing these staff reports to have consistent information. And I understand where your question comes from, but certainly we've provided one outlook and given you recommendations for the future. Mm-hmm. So I want to just make that clear. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for that. You found your questions. Okay, Nancy's back on for questions.
We would not have a structural deficiency, which we do this year.
Okay, congratulations, and thank you for that.
You can congratulate your city manager. She's the one that promoted this.
Congratulations, Andrea. Okay, my last question here is about the selection of a committee, and I was wondering how, if in fact we decide to do this, how would that probably work, and would it be at all similar to the Measure Q Oversight Committee or maybe even the same group? I don't know.
I think it would be very similar to the Measure Q Committee. While the Measure Q Committee reviews expenditures after the fact, these people would be reviewing recommendations to spend money. So you would really be reliant on gathering people that have some financial background. You would want some people that were invested in the community. It would be something where you would go through a selection process. Perhaps each council member would bring forward a member, and or we may even want to have a council member on the budget review committee. That's kind of what I've seen with the other ones, where they may have one or two council members and some people that are in the community. One of them did have all five that were members from the community, and their budget review committee has been suspended. So they did it only to cover difficult times and to try to figure out what they were going to do to resolve those those deficiencies. So they actually did suspend their committee. But that's kind of how I see it operating if we were to do something like that.
Any more questions? We'll open it up for public comment. Okay, at this time we can open it up for public comment for those people who would like to speak on this item. Seeing none, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council. I'll look to my left for comments.
George. Well, here I go, throwing more sticks in the spokes. I don't see anything wrong with what we're doing now. You got the budget. We seem like we're all right. And if things start to go really bad, like you're thinking possibly could happen, maybe we could bring this back for a committee. But right now, I'm very much against any committee, volunteer or not. I read between the lines here, and it looks like that whatever benefits they would bring would be a deficit to the work you're doing now. And the staff is overloaded now. What do we need to be start teaching people how to do budgeting? It just doesn't make sense to me right now. So I'm very much against this at this time.
Thank you, George. Christine?
I know, George, they didn't do a very good job training us, did they? I know. Oh, so they didn't do a very good job training us. I know. We were too much work. Thank you for the report. I get the sense that maybe I don't think I'm reading between the lines to say that I don't think this is a popular idea with perhaps staff, and I appreciate the honesty that definitely came through in the report. So to begin, I'll point out that our major city goal number 5 was ensure fiscal sustainability that we all did agree on. And under action plan, the key task C and E do relate back to this agenda item. C is continue with budget workshops to include more information and detail as well as glossary items. So our goal was to expand basically the knowledge base people have for our budgeting process. I mean, if we're putting in a glossary, it means people don't really get it. And maybe you're doing that for the council, so I'm not sure. But then also the E is evaluate concept of budget subcommittee. So this is something that was a goal for us to bring back and to review. That said, I'm probably going to disagree with Councilman League because I respectfully disagree with the sentiments in the staff report that said that there is currently, and I'm quoting, currently a significant amount of input from individuals with expertise in finance without the benefit of a formal subcommittee. Having gone through the budget process for the first time myself this year, I simply didn't see that. We had some folks show up once or twice. I think we had two budget, one I recall in the community center, we had one over here. I don't remember that we were overwhelmed with public comment. I was not overwhelmed with input on email like I was when we really went out and recruited people to give us information about our goals. When we asked for our goals, we did get quite a bit of information. So I just don't feel that we have too many people giving us too many good ideas at this point. And the kind of obvious thing is it really is the citizens' money. And I think that we are really obligated to make time to listen to experts who happen to...
I don't remember right now.
Okay. So I would just offer those remarks as a beginning point for our discussion. I think that it's something that we owe to our citizens, and I have some ideas on key elements that we could include in this Citizens Finance Committee. Thanks.
Thanks, Christine. Nancy?
Well, I will totally agree with George. I think he has a very good point, and I'm afraid I have to disagree respectfully with Christine. In the last 3 years that I've been on council, I've received some wonderful and detailed advice and support on budgeting from private citizens who took their time to go through the budget and then go through it with me in great detail. So I've been very happy with our informal citizens who are helping us with our budget. All that being said, if in fact the majority of this council chooses to go with the budget committee, I would suggest that we use the approach that we used before, where every council member recommends or nominates a person to this committee rather than just having one or two council members choose the committee.
Thanks, Nancy. Noah?
Thank you. I am in support of moving forward with looking at the structure and the policy of how this could fit into our needs. I see the same sort of issues that you mentioned to earlier, in that we are in a stable place now where we've addressed the Dynegy revenues, but we're also now going to be later on tonight talking about revenue generation based on the upcoming PERS expenses and other challenges that we're planning to deal with. So I sense that we're at a point now where we really do need the community to be more involved, and that this involvement can help us look at priorities and strategize perhaps, and really wrap our arms around how we're going to be dealing with the PERS challenges, as well as considering other revenue generation opportunities as we move forward. I think this is something that will evolve, and so I would think that it'd be best for us to start with a committee in a policy and structural format that's more simple in the beginning and builds off of that initial experience. And I definitely do agree with Ms. Slayton that we should start with a recognition that staff time is a premium, and to ask her to come back to us with some ideas about how we could structure this committee that recognizes that and also sees the benefit of having more citizen involvement. So I'm definitely willing to go forward, and I think Christine put it really well, in that we have just amazing expertise in this town that is willing to roll their sleeves up and help us work through the tougher issues. So my feeling is there's a number of citizens in the community that have a whole lot more budgeting experience than the entire council. We've all gone through the budgeting process now at least once, and some of us many more times. And each round we learn more. It seems like we've improved the formatting and presentation of the budget as well as the process of the budget. But I like to think that there's still plenty of room for improvement, and I think a committee like this could help us with that.
Thanks, Noah. I would be in support of this as well. I think reviewing the Benicia outline, I think that was very simple and appropriate, and I saw some similarities that would be appropriate for Moore Bay, and considering Benicia. Has anybody been to Benicia on council? It's actually similar to Moore Bay in some ways. It's an interesting town. So just on that note, it's a cute little town up in the Bay Area. Yeah. So, I would be in support of this. And I think the other thing is that, on any of these things, there's the opportunity to, if there's successes with it, then, you know, we can expand that. Or if there's, you know, if we recognize that this is a deficit to our staff time, and we can recognize that and we can act accordingly. So, you know, with that, I think, I'd be supportive of this. And if there's a motion out there, I would entertain a motion. And if not, I probably could come up with one.
I could take a stab at it. Oh, you've got one? Okay, go for it.
Do you want to try? Do you want to start? Do you want to try? Do you want me to? I'll float it out. Okay, I would move the council approve the formation of a Citizens Finance Committee and direct staff to prepare and bring back for council consideration the following key elements for the committee: mission, duties, structure, scope of work, and council direct staff to use the cities of Benicia and Piedmont as guiding documents to create.
It's probably going to fall on Susan and I. As I understand it, you'd be putting in a formal advisory, another advisory body, and so we would obviously want them to be in the same format as our other bylaws for other advisory, putting in all the criteria that was mentioned by Christine Johnson. And my preference would be to have that ready for you and have it approved before January, so that you'd be able to appoint to the advisory body this group with the other groups.
And the Measure Q adheres to those same bylaws
as
well?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, thanks for that. Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Discussion's done. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries 3-2. George and Nancy dissenting? Okay. That continues that. Thank you very much. And moving on to item D3. Discussion and recommendation on proposal received for sublease of 307 Morro Bay Boulevard, and that would be Ms. Luker.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council. This is a pretty exciting staff report. As you will recall, back in June, you approved a lease agreement that allowed the city to use the property at 307 Morro Bay Boulevard. It's the corner of Morro Bay Boulevard and Main Street that houses a small building, a public restroom, and some open space. At that meeting, you directed staff to prepare an RFP to bring a business into that, to sublease the building, and to offset the costs of the lease that the city has. We sent out the RFP. I've included in your staff report the timeline, and I won't go over that this evening in the based on the time that we have on the clock tonight. But we did put out an RFP, and we received 5 proposals back from that RFP. After those proposals were returned, we convened a review committee, and that consisted of council members Nancy Johnson and Christine Johnson, the city attorney, myself, and chamber executive Craig Schmidt. We reviewed the 5 proposals. After that review, we invited 3 proposers to come back and provide us a verbal presentation. At that point, we had a proposal proposer that withdrew their proposal, and we had 2 proposals come back. We did that a couple of weeks ago, and we looked at, in the RFP, there was selection criteria. We looked at that selection criteria. We listened to the presentations, and after that meeting, it was unanimous with the proposal team that they recommended moving forward the Grandma's Frozen Yogurt and Waffle Shop at the Gathering Place. What we're asking for you tonight is to direct staff to begin to negotiate a sublease with that organization, and we will be coming back with you after that sublease is negotiated to let you know the final results of that. So tonight's action, again, is to allow us to begin to negotiate a sublease with Grandma's Frozen Yogurt and Waffle Shop. I will tell you that both Lenny and Beverly are here this evening, and they're the proposers. And while they may speak, they're happy to answer any questions that you might have for them. I'm happy to answer any questions as well.
Great. Thank you. I'll turn to my left for any questions for staff. Seeing none to the left, to the right. Seeing no questions, might be a good time to have the some of the proposals come up and speak. I know that, as you laid out, we have a couple of proposals. We have one proposal. Well, we have 3, but we have a couple of
The individuals that were here with the proposal that was recommended. There are 2, Lenny
Beverly?
And Beverly.
They're here. Thank you. I was just looking for that. Pardon me for that. If you want to come forward and speak to that, I appreciate it. Thank you. Can't hear you.
you hear me?
Yep. Speak a little bit louder.
Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Okay,
thank you.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Council. I'm Dr. Beverly Ford. I'm one of the co-owners of the proposed shop, Grandma's Frozen Yogurt and Yogurt and Waffle Shop. My husband Lenny is in the back, and Grandma is here. This is a proposal for real frozen yogurt with live culture and probiotics, which is required a lot in the dietary for our children and our families. And we are also going to be making real waffles. For example, on one of our recipes, we have granola waffle with fresh banana and a dash of the frozen yogurt, which is a complete meal. I want to thank a few people, and then I know there's going to be some questions, but we are one of the 18 people that contacted the Chamber of Commerce, the Economic Development. We're the frozen yogurt people that were on there. And they were helpful in being able to give us some suggestions because we've been looking for a place for 3 years, almost 3 years. And the adventure for the courtyard and the shop is the for-profit, and they go well together. And it's because of the community coming together. We also had business people that are musicians in the community that have agreed to build, donate their time to build our stage for the musicians. And we've also talked with the fire marshal and the Morro Bay, City of Morro Bay staff, and they've been very helpful in helping us put the proposal together. I think in final is we're looking forward to being able to provide that public bathroom. We did talk to the businesses, if you read our proposal, and they basically gave us the information that we needed, which is the farmers market. They're many times looking for a bathroom, those that are out there selling, and we'll be able to provide that for our community. And we're very proud to be able to offer a bike parking area where people that are coming to camp, people staying at the hotels, and our families that live in our community can ride downtown, park at the gathering place, and be able to shop and eat downtown. So, thank you.
Thank you for that. We'll come back for questions if there are any. At this point, before we open it for public comment, there are some other proposals here. If any of the individuals who submitted proposals are here tonight and would like to speak, now would be the time. Seeing none, I'll open it up for public comment. Anybody who'd like to speak on this item, please come forward.
Well, since no one else is moving, Barbara Dorr, nice to see you all this evening. When I looked at the agenda, I really was looking for D5, and I stopped at this agenda item, and I started reading it, and I was just so amazed at this wonderful collaborative effort and to bring a place downtown which will actually bring people there for the gathering place, some yogurt, but go to the other businesses. It just seemed wonderful. When my daughter was in high school, I was with Drama Boosters and the president, and there are so many young, talented people. It would just be so wonderful to see the young people in our community, the adult musicians, and just people coming together. And it was just a wonderful collaborative effort. And I just wanted to be here to say, please vote for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. Any more for public comment?
Susan Stewart, again. Hadn't really planned on speaking, but just wanted to thank everybody. I do have a business downtown. Business is here all the time. Where's the restroom? So I really appreciate that this is finally going to happen. Can't wait for it. I think you've had some good applications. I think this is a great choice. Add some variety to our little downtown area and hopefully brings a lot more life and vibrancy to it. So thank you.
Thank you. Here we go.
Hello, my name is Taylor Newton, and I am the supervisor for the Gorilla Gardening Club of Morro Bay, and we're working with the business owners of Grandma's Frozen Yogurt and Waffle Shop at the Gathering Place, and I just wanted to give my say on it, and I'm totally for it, and we're really excited about it. The whole club is. We're up to somewhere between 30 and 45 members in our club now, and we work with people in the community, businesses in the community that are sustainable partnerships with our club, and the goal is always to get jobs and to give young people the opportunity to explore their dreams as well as figure out how to be a sustainable member of our community. And for a business to come forward, and you know what I'm seeing is they're given half of their space to not only for us to have access to and find employment through and to find avenues to from our club members to explore their arts and such things. But it's also a place for these club members to interact with people of different age groups, young people, old people. And that's always been my dream for Morro Bay, is to see these kind of events and these kind of businesses that involve the community on multiple levels. And I'm just really excited to have a business step forward and to have the city create this opportunity in the first place. It seems like a very smart way to move forward. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Taylor. Seeing no more public comment, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council. And I'll look to my left. George, do you want to start off on discussion?
No, just glad to have you.
Okay, Christine?
It was a pleasure working with the committee on the selection committee, and it was a pleasure hearing all of the great ideas. Every idea was a great one, and Nancy and I sit on the Economic Development Committee with the Chamber of Commerce, so we were very supportive, you know, going to Top Dog, and you know, you end up buying something because, of course, you're using the restroom. So we understand that, and while that might be great for Top Dog, I still go there anyway. But I think that this is a really important point to make, that they are operating not just their own business, and it's a startup business for them, but also they are operating a public restroom. So that will have its challenges, I'm sure, moving forward, and I appreciate them taking it on. So obviously, it was a unanimous decision. I'm very supportive. I'm impressed they spent 3 years researching their business model, so they're not going to be surprised, I don't believe, by anything, hopefully. They excelled at collaboration and creating this amazing concept of the gathering place, which is really unique, and I have no doubt they'll work hard. So look forward to the other comments up here tonight. Thanks.
Thank you. Nancy?
I, too, thoroughly enjoyed being part of the process with the selection committee. We had some wonderful, wonderful ideas. Some proposals, of course, were better than others. I think one of the great things was that Craig was on our committee, and so we were able to give him the proposals from the people we did not select, and he will be contacting them about locations or perhaps even incubator businesses. So it really was a wonderful, wonderful opportunity for all of us. I was just amazed at the research and the time that Grandma's Frozen Yogurt had put into this. They've been to the fire department. They've been to planning. They've really checked things out. And that was kind of, for me, one of the final decisions. Of course, the top, upmost point is that we will have an open restroom downtown. You can go sit and play cards or visit with the guys from Gorilla Gardeners, and you don't even have to go in and buy yogurt, although I know I will, because they're having wonderful yogurt, one of which is sugar-free, and I love to look for sugar-free products. But that does not mean I will stop going up to Sweet Offerings. If I've probably been there more than anybody, and I highly recommend their sugar-free caramel pecan roll. It's delicious, plus their fudge and their ice cream. So I think both businesses will complement each other, and I'm really looking forward to approving this tonight.
Nice comments, Nancy. I'm hungry now.
Good.
Thank you. And apples, after what she just talked about, I don't know. And I think it's really important to recognize the public comments that were made earlier, because at this point we are embarking on an experiment that appears to be working out well. As I looked at the different proposals, each one had the potential to create a competition or a competitive environment with an existing business. So the thought that I had was, well, are we supplying an unfair advantage to the business based on the rent that would be paid or the burden that we're paying for from the city side? And I think we aren't. I think with the proposal as it is for $800 a month, they're paying a reasonable rate for what you could expect for that amount of square footage in the downtown area and providing a great public benefit. So overall, I think this is about as fair as we could ask and make sure that we're not creating an unduly unfair competition type environment for another business. And I think you're right. I think there's a good chance that this, we're hoping, will improve the business climate throughout the downtown. And I also am glad that the Chamber is going to pursue the other proposals because they were all very impressive and a lot of thought went into them. As I looked at Grandma's proposal, I felt that the most impressive thing to me was their legwork with the neighborhood. And for the amount of time that they put into it, along with the real need that they fit in with the neighborhood and don't create any sort of conflicts, and that they understand where the neighborhood's culture is and where it can go with their help. And overall, that was an important decision point for me. And I also see them as probably the most stable proposal, which is also important. What we don't want to do is go into an arrangement that then, because it's not competitive or stable, creates a vacancy down the road that we have to then deal with and work backwards and create an empty space there in that meantime. So the one thought I did have was we may want to, at this point, the proposal doesn't have any, on the timeline, it starts at 800 and there's no discussion about an escalator or a revisiting period as we have with our tenants. We're leasing the property and then subleasing to the proposer. I'd like to talk just briefly about how we could make sure that we're providing some opportunity to check in with the arrangement as it goes forward and to cover any escalators that the city is going to have to pay during these 5 years. So if staff would like to talk about that, I did get a chance to speak with Grandma's team, and they said that they'd be willing to go there as well.
Make that sort of call at this point, but that is the very next step.
Okay. And I haven't seen anything up to this point that's a deal breaker. There's a few minor issues that I think we can work through. The main issue is with parking and the spaces in the gatherings area, but if those are open to the public, and as she's mentioned, do it as a nonprofit and profit, I believe there's ways that we can present that'll fit within our zoning code.
Just want to point out that there has been existing businesses at that location that have met their parking requirements there, satisfied those. It'll be especially easier if that gathering area is open to the public. We generally don't park public spaces. So, example, on the Embarcadero, where there's tables for people to eat next to existing food service, we don't include that in their parking. So I think it's all workable. It looks like a fairly simple process to go through.
Okay, great. Thanks for covering those little details. I think the point about, well, everybody made some great points on that. I think the comments about staff and the planning department working with them on this is good. I think the other thing to echo is that the council approval doesn't necessarily approve all the uses that will be out there through this proposal. You'll still be going through the planning department to work out those details. So I think it's clear it's good to make that differentiation between, you know, this approval tonight. You still have to go through the planning process on that. So I just want to make sure that point was there. And, you know, this is a great partnership for an anchor downtown in the bathroom. So with that, one more comment to my right.
Yes, a quick comment. Mr. Levick, as far as the planning department goes, is there anything that the council can do to help expedite this as far as giving you some special support or designation, recognizing that the space is open and we're paying the rent at this point?
I would hope that council didn't do something like that, because there is a due process with our decisions here and an appeals process. So I would encourage them, the planning department and the applicant, to work together. Let the process work, exactly.
Thank you. Got it.
Okay, and then the last question is, do we need to, there's this request for a special compliance, which has to do with opening up the restroom to outdoor or out of building access rather than needing to access the restroom through the store. Do we need to talk to that tonight?
No. The only thing we'd like you to do tonight is just allow us to start to negotiate a contract, and then again, this will come back to you. And those issues will be dealt with through the planning department.
Okay. Thanks. You have any more comments? Okay. All right. We have a motion. Let's get it.
Move approval of D3.
Second.
We have a motion by Nancy and a second by George. Do we have any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor? Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. Great. Let's move on to item D4. Item D4 is authorization to issue a request for proposal for a rate study for water and sewer rates. And this is Mr. Livick. Thank you,
Ms. Mayor, Council. What we're looking for tonight is to begin the process to look at both our water and sewer rates. To begin that process, we really need to look at our rates and rate structure, conduct some public meetings, and bring some options forward to the council. Ultimately, if there are any adjustments to the rates, then those would move forward in a Proposition 218 vote. We estimate that it will cost up to about $75,000 to do both the water and sewer rates. If we did one or the other, it's still going to probably cost about $75,000 since they're really looking at the same data for both of those. So both our water and sewer rate structures are based loosely based on what flows through the meter. So water directly, what flows through the meter, you pay for. Wastewater, we estimate how much would be used for outside uses and have a factor in there for that. Last time we visited water rates was in 1994. Pretty much have a flat billing rate that escalates as you use more water, you pay more. Similarly with wastewater rates, although we do have a little bit billing different covering our debt ratio. So the state has a requirement that we make about 125% of what our debt is in the amount that we collect. We're about 70% of that right now. So the state is going to require us to increase our rates, or they have other alternative methods to collect that money for us, to put that into a escrow account so that we'll have that money available. I think now is the opportune time to start this rate evaluation. It does gives us a chance to opportunity to look at revenue, operations, maintenance expenses, and our capital needs for our water and wastewater funds, make sure that we have and a sufficient revenue to make these long-term obligations. We'll be looking at our five-year financial plans in detail for the water and wastewater funds, make sure that we have stable rate adjustments to avoid spikes. We'll have an opportunity to look at our water and wastewater rates so that we have a fair and equitable rate, and that these rates meet Proposition 218. We also have an ability to comply with our 2010 Urban Water Management Plan with our water rates and creating a conservation rate. Currently, the city does not have available resources to conduct an internal rate study and coordinate that as public meetings for looking at a Prop 218 election. So we're looking to prepare an RFP and issue that RFP for that rate study analysis. And in conclusion, you know, based upon our needs for maintenance in our both our water and wastewater system, our relocation of our water reclamation facility and our continued maintenance of our existing plant, and the need to meet our debt coverage ratios for both those projects, We recommend that we move forward with issuance of an RFP for rate study, and in accordance with our recently adopted consultant hiring policy. That concludes my staff report, and I'll answer any questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Livick. To my right this time, any questions to my right?
Yes. Noah? Yes, I do. Mr. Livick, a couple of quick questions. One is when you're talking about the debt coverage for the state water, how would that be affected with the discussion about the renovation or rebuild of state water, the bypass canal discussion? We're expecting at some point the state to come back to us and say, you'll need to pay more to still participate. And how would we be either prepared to handle that based on this, or what would be our response to that sort of a scenario?
I'm not sure the dollar amounts are available to look at that in a rate study. That would be something that we might have to revisit in the future for that debt service. From what I hear from the state is if you're going to continue on state water, just plan on your debt never being retired. We have existing debt right now paying for the infrastructure that gets it over from the valley over to the Central Coast, which will be retiring in a few years. The state does not anticipate that really ever happening because of the requirements for the Delta project that is going to be moving forward. And if we continue to take state water, we will need to meet those debt coverage.
Okay, thank you. And then with the rate structure, there's different options that were discussed there, tiered and so forth. Could an evaluation, the study, include some discussion about which option may fit or the benefits?
Yeah, that's one of the advantages of doing this, this rigorous rate study in accordance with the guidance by AWWA and the Water Environment Federation, that it does include different types of rate structures that the council and the community will be afforded to look at. And because there's probably tens of different ways to structure rates, high conservation rate, a flat rate, which flat rate I do not recommend that we do, that you pay, $50 a month and you use as much water as you can get through your hose bibs. No, that's probably not a good way to encourage conservation. But there are probably better rate structures that fit our community than we currently have.
Okay. And along the lines of the escalator, freeze at the last rate increase and remain there rather than the unlimited into the future escalator that was in place.
Correct. And it's probably, from my perspective, it's probably better to look at the rates on a regular basis rather than, for example, with our water rates, waiting 20 years to do this process again. So, for example, there's a couple of local cities that I've been talking to, Pismo and Grover, that do this on a five-year basis. They they update their studies, so it's not costing them, $75,000 to do it. It may be 10 or 15 to refresh that rate study and make sure that they're current, they're not falling behind. You know, there are strategies that we can look at with, for example, capital improvement projects. We can kind of stretch out our CIP program so that they don't affect the rates. But that's kind of a decision that the community needs to look at along with council to make that choice, what we want to do with our rates.
So along those lines, at what point would the community be able to be presented with a review, a summary of the expenditures within both the wastewater and water funds? How will we actually present the justification for what we've spent the recent funds on and where we'd be going with any inflators?
So the way these rate studies typically work is the consultant comes in, grabs all of our customer data, all of our capital project data, all of our expenses, crunches the numbers, and then starts out with a public workshop and presents that those numbers to the community, sometimes with alternatives, sometimes without alternatives. Depends how many workshops that you want to have to bring, you know, the community along. So there's a series of public. This takes about a year to go through this process. Some cities do it quicker. Some cities take longer to do it. So it's about a year-long process to go through this rate setting analysis, along with, you know, the public workshops and the required 218 election if there is an adjustment. So we'll work with, you know, developing our RFP so that we have plenty of opportunity for public and council input along the way.
Okay. And along those lines, in 2007, which was just before I got on the council, but I have heard that the rate increase at that point for wastewater was not actually designed to address the wastewater treatment plant costs for the new cost for that plant, but more focused for the collection system. And the discussion was at the point when the new plant was online, we would then discuss this with the state revolving fund discussion. So it was trying to, I think, align it with better knowledge about what the true cost could be for the new system.
Yeah, just to clarify that a little bit, the estimated costs based on the facilities master plan were factored into the rate analysis. The way that the budget was used was early on years, the majority of the budget was used for collection system improvements, and then later on years were to be to fund the wastewater treatment plant. We would have to revisit rates when we're going for an SRF loan to make sure that we have the proper debt coverage ratio anyway. Let's go back to fantasy land, and let's say we're moving on with the old projects. About now, we would be doing a rate analysis based on, because we'd be close to final design, we'd have good engineers' estimates to base those rates on, and we would be doing that additional rate analysis at that point in time also.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. I think before I'm going to jump into some questions before I look to my left here. Thanks, Rob. So the $75,000 estimate, how do we get to $75,000? This is just something that you've, you know, reached out and kind of looked at other studies?
Looked at other cities, other studies.
Okay. So is there a cap on this?
Well, we would use our consultant selection policy, so the most that the authorized by the city manager is $175,000. I don't even think we'll be anywhere near that amount with a rate study. For example, the consultant that was used, Pismo and Grover, was about two-thirds of that amount, about $50,000 for their detailed rate analysis. It depends our master plan side, nor on our rate analysis, our economic side. We don't have a policy. The only policy that we do have is we bring back a budget every year, and we have projects that fit within our capital improvement plan. We do try to project out about 5 years for that capital budget, but they're not a real rigorous estimate at this point in time.
Okay. I'll reserve the rest of mine for discussion. I'll look to my left. George?
Well, here we go again. After all these workshops and things that is going to be brought forth, and they come in and finally the consultant tells you how much you're going to have to pay. Okay. What do we do after that?
Council would have to decide whether to accept the consultant's recommendation, and then we would do a Prop 218 election, because rates and services do have to be approved by those that are subject to those rates.
Okay. What do you think the chances are of that? He's in an election these time of years for raising of anything. That's a silly question. I'm bothered every time we come up here and start spending money for consultants. It's just, you know, I bet you right now you could probably tell me within 5 cents what the rate should be raised. But anyway, let it go.
Christine?
Thank you very much. I have three questions. Number one, can you explain very simple terms why it's important? Think of, you know, someone who has never heard the words debt ratio before. Can you explain to the public why we're talking about debt ratio and what that means in terms of our water rates?
Well, in simple terms, why it's required is the state says we have to do it. But why the state wants us to maintain that is if there was some shortfall in funding from the city, that we would have the reserves to continue to pay our debt coverage if the payments didn't keep coming into the city.
Okay, thank you. And then through the RFP process, will we have an analysis of the three rate upper structures, flat rate, multi-tiered, and inverted block? Will that come through in the RFP process?
Yes, and perhaps a rate analysis that is common out there that I'm not privy to. So,
okay.
I don't think we're going to be, you know, reinventing the wheel. I think we're going to be looking at rate structures that are used commonly in California.
Okay. And then the last question is, in the staff report on page 113, about middle of the page, it states qualified customers able to provide low-income documentation were afforded the opportunity to participate in a rate reduction program. There are currently approximately 50 customers on this program, and due to inconsistencies with the requirements of Prop 218, the program will terminate in January of 2014. Can you elaborate a little bit on that? Thanks.
Basically, with our low-income subsidy, we're asking, in simple terms, we're asking one customer to help pay for another customer's water bill, is what we're doing through this. The customer that is paying for the subsidizing the other customer's water bill didn't have an opportunity to vote for that in Prop 218. It's of general benefit to the community. So you can continue to do programs like that, but the money can't come from the enterprise fund. It must come from the general fund. So if the city's council chose to continue a subsidy program, that money would need to come from the general fund, not from the other ratepayers.
Okay, and then right now it looks like there are about 50 customers on the program. Do we promote that program in any way?
Not anymore, we don't.
Not anymore.
No,
we're going to be
terminating that program,
right? So the challenge is implementing something similar to help folks in those low-income areas. Are there other programs out there?
Other ways to do that.
Okay.
For example, a conservation rate structure. So if you use less, there may be a way to reward that conservation.
And that will be part of the RFP,
yes,
as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. No more questions. Thank you so much.
Okay, that concludes questions. I'll open it up for public comment at this time. Anyone who would like to speak to this issue, now's a good time to come up for public comment. Please state your name. Welcome.
Good.
For public comment, no more. I'll close public comment and bring it back to council, and perhaps Mr. Leavitt can answer that last question.
Maybe Mr. Schultz has a better answer.
Certainly. As mentioned, the enterprise fund is a separate enterprise fund, and it can't be used to subsidize either low income or different rates amongst the different demographics or different categories. But that doesn't mean the general fund can't subsidize that. The general fund could subsidize the enterprise fund to provide a lower income or for other rate structures, and that could be financed through a tax measure if that's what council so desired. So you can do that, but it just can't come from the enterprise fund. It'd have to come from general fund.
Thank you. Okay, back to council for discussion. I'm going to open up with a couple of points I just wanted to clarify as far as the staff report goes. The background on this particular staff report, this staff report came back, actually came to council in March of this year, basically on whether or not we want to go forward on water rate and sewer rate study. And basically it was how we wanted to go forward. And I pulled the minutes on those because, you know, basically at that time, council made direction to bring this back. And reading some of those minutes, we wanted to have that come back with a history of why we were looking at a water rate study when we haven't done any adjustments since 1994. So we've got 20 years of time where we haven't done any water rate adjustment. And part of that, at that council meeting, we requested a history of why that came up. Why would we go 20 years without adjusting our water rate study? And the other part of that was what a policy would look like. And so in this particular staff report, none of that background is laid out on where this came from. So I'm a little bit disappointed with that because I think we're coming back to this with a request for an RFP when the direction from the previous council meeting was to revisit this and find out why we would go that long without making any adjustments and what we should be doing for policy to make sure that we don't do this anymore. So I'm starting out with some criticism, as you can tell, on this and where we're at. But I think before we go into an RFP, we need to solve those. We need to ask those questions. Why don't we have a policy that we're letting the city go 20 years without addressing a water rate structure? So that was the same. That was troubling for me then, and it's troubling for me now. And I think we should be addressing that, regardless of where we go for an RFP. We need to come up with something that we're proactively reviewing, as you made an example of Pismo or Grover Beach updating theirs every 5 years. It costs them less. And so I think we should be in a proactive mode. So I'm starting out with that, and basically a little bit disappointed on that. And I'll turn it over to my colleagues for any of their comments on where we're going with this, and then discuss where we're going for an RFP on this. And I'll turn to my left. George, any discussion? Christine?
Thank you. I looked at the minutes as well from March 26th, but I was curious about the report the first time, because I remember that there were a lot of questions about the past. So I feel the question I asked in the minutes, why haven't we raised water rates for almost 20 years? I still don't really have an answer to that. And I think we really need to dig in and lay out for the community why we haven't. And I would love to see some historical analysis. It doesn't have to be very detailed, but maybe just times and dates of things were brought forward and what the decisions were, because I think it would be helpful for me making big decisions on rates that will impact everyone. Whether they're a resident and a business owner, just a business owner, or just a resident. So I would like to know what thought process was on past councils, how they struggled with it, and maybe some decisions they made. I'd like to understand that, because I think 2 decades is a long time, and it is falling on this council to make some very big decisions for the community.
Nancy, any comments? Noah?
Yeah, thank you. Could I start with giving Mr. Livick the chance to respond to those comments?
That'd be great.
I don't have a whole lot of history with the city, so I don't know the thought process that went along, why rates weren't increased, other than it's a difficult decision to make. But I think Rob, he's been here for a long time.
Had a debt issue.
Do you have any more comments, Noah?
Yes. I was obviously on the previous council that we talked around this issue and obviously never resolved it. And I think that's kind of the standard that this has been caught up in for the last couple of decades. And I hope that this council is one that will help resolve that. Saying that and recognizing that politically it would be and is uncomfortable to ever talk about raising rates when you see how expensive cost of living is and so forth. So my thought is that it's very important as we go forward on this to make sure that we're presenting to the community the justification of why we need this and to lay out the information that they would need to reasonably determine that, yes, I can vote in favor of this, understanding the implications of not, and that the money has been managed well and will continue to be managed well. So I hear Mr. Livick in his comments that that would be addressed through the survey, but at this point, before we even jump into the survey, I think we have some internal work that needs to be done to present this information in a clearer way and lay out how we've spent the money so far, as well as the history that's brought us to this point, and some more information about going forward, what we anticipate and will need additional funds for. So to me, that would be a logical place to start, work through that, and then make the decision of, okay, what is it that this rate study needs to accomplish and where are we going? I think if we don't do that, we're jumping and then deciding, okay, do we want to jump or not? And let's find out as we fall. And for something as serious as this, I think we need to take our time. It's been 20 years. If we take a little more time to work through this, we'll have a much better understanding of where we are and where we're going.
I'll just reiterate a couple things on this, because I think at the last meeting, basically, it says, you know, and I'm reading from the minutes, and this item would be continued for a future meeting. When it is heard, there should be more information, historical information, rate comparisons with other cities, as well as more detailed breakdown of our costs and expenses and how our water and sewer rates tie together. I think that's what we were looking for. To say that we're bringing something like this forward to go out to an RFP, our community needs to be educated on why our water rates are where they're at and why it took us 20 years to get to where we are now, so we understand, you know, why a policy that might be help us and actually require council to take action. If you want to use the debt coverage ratio as a marker, and we were required to maintain a debt coverage ratio, and Mr. Leibitt, you can pick a number, you know, that might be suitable, then if we fall below that, then that would come before council, and they would be required to make an action one way or the other. So we're basically being proactive in how we maintain, you know, the city and as far as our water expenses and things like that. Those are the types of things that I was talking about when we were talking about our previous council meeting when we were looking at this then. So I still look at it this as though those are the things that we need to be addressing, and we need it maybe to your point that if we jump and go into this RFP, we work on it, you know, things, you know, we let things go and we don't come back unless, of course, which I've scribbled down, that to agendize, we should be looking at a policy to address this issue. I think there's substance and good reason to have something like that. So that's my concern. I mean, it is troublesome to go that long and not be addressing our water rates. And it doesn't matter what council it falls on. You know, it's still a community that is looking at, you know, whatever council it is to say, hey, why are you raising our water rates? Why are we spending $75,000 to do a study when, you know, we could have just been maintaining something and being proactive in how we're doing with our water rates? So, for me, I'm not so quick to just go ahead and go out to RFP on this, but I know you had some comments on that, so I would defer to you if you had any more comments on that, Noah.
No, I think we should do some more work internally to present the justification information that we had talked about in the previous meeting. Perhaps Mr. Leavitt could comment on that. I know there's some staff time involved there. What you know, to what degree would that affect your other work programs? And do you understand where we're coming from on this as far as wanting to wade in rather than dive head first?
I think I understand. Talks about what our revenues and expenses in the water and wastewater funds have been. Just want to, you know, point out that we currently aren't meeting our debt coverage ratio. The state is not going to look kindly upon us if we continue to do this.
I understand.
This.
So we need to move. The message is we need to move on this. I understand that.
Correct.
So by delaying and continuing something to make, you know, to get more information on something we already know, you know, I understand what you're saying. But, you know, we can't be faced with, we have to make a decision now, in my opinion, consistently. We have to be more proactive in this. I'm pushing back a little bit, as you can tell. And, you know, it's, you know, not comfortable, you know, no direction on towards you personally or anything. But, you know, I just look at this and I just think we could have been more proactive in that. That's where I'm going. So I would guess when we come back with this, that the direction that we just talked about, we can come back with that historical information. Including in that would be basically the RFP. So you're saying that you could bring back an RFP, basically a rough draft of an RFP that we would look at as well. So if we have to move at that, move as far as making a decision because our debt ratio coverage is not there, then we should be working simultaneously to do both.
Certainly we can bring back the additional information. You can decide whether to go to an RFP, but you just passed an RFP policy, and under that policy we would not be required to bring back that RFP policy for you to look at as a draft.
Okay.
But we certainly could, but that wasn't our intent to bring back the RFP.
So the RFP, basically, it's not some other policy that we're RFP that we're going to bring back and we're going to say, well, you know, we're going to massage this RFP about a little bit because we want to see a little bit of brown here, a little bit of red here. It's pretty straightforward. We just need the study. And that's pretty black and white from your perspective.
Yes, and I think we can take a parallel path with this.
Yeah.
Bring back the data and continue and work on an RFP with anticipation that once we have the data and analysis, that we'll have a, you know, favorable recommendation from council to move forward.
Okay.
For hiring a consultant to move, so we don't lose any additional time on this.
Great, thank you. Any more discussion to my left? No. We should.
I just want to really quickly. I appreciate the conversation very much, and I think that I want to point out that it's not. To be honestly, you could black out the names of all the council members in the last 20 years. That's not what I'm interested in. Who said what? I'm just interested in what was the thought process and how can we make sure, as the mayor said, that we put policies into place that we don't get to a point where it's gone this long and we find ourselves in a difficult position on many levels. So I'm not interested in who said what when, but more of an overview of the process and how it got us to here. Do you understand?
I think I'm clear now what historical means, not the rates themselves per se, but the decision-making process of how we got to the rates.
Exactly. But this is just me, so I'd like to hear from I don't want to be the only one directing that.
Okay.
I'm also personally interested in this information package that you're bringing back. There is a lot of comments about the expense in Morro Bay for water and wastewater, and as we mentioned in the minutes, it would be nice to see just a preliminary snapshot of where we stand within other communities. Obviously, each one has its own factors about why their costs are what they are, but we should start to look at that. I'm thinking this is something that the information the community will need to be able to make the decision responsibly. Let's start to gather that and package it together. Your comments about the budget has this information. Yes, it does, but let's bring it to one room so that people can go there and learn more.
Yeah, I think the comparison to other cities is valuable information, but it's really only comparison's sake. It doesn't really tell us what our rate should be because our costs may be different from those. So our rate, we can't make a profit with an enterprise fund. We charge what it costs to deliver the product or provide the service. Hopefully we're not delivering wastewater.
Okay. So to move forward on this, basically we're going to continue this item. We're going to bring it back with the historical information that was requested as discussed.
Yes.
Okay. We're going to work in parallel path with this RFP. And just for my information, then there is the concern with the state that we're...
unanimous support for whatever direction it is that we go in.
I personally didn't see that much wrong with the report because I understood that our water rates had been very high 20 years ago, and it wasn't until just recently that there began to be a problem and that the change in the state law is required that we do this. My main concern, I think, is when will this go to the public for a vote, because we're going to be talking in a few minutes about an additional tax for a vote, and I think if we're voting on both at the same time, we're probably in big trouble. But that's my opinion.
George?
Well, I think Rob was pretty clear on this, that we're not out of line for 15 years. It's just been the last 5 years, so here we are entering into this conversation within 5 years. So I think we're right on. I just get upset every time I see start spending money for things that I think we should know within house. And but if this is going to be the policy that we are going to do this, and we are going to put out an RFP, then we might as well do it tonight. I mean, if there's no use putting it off, if that's what we're going to bring in, if we're going to put an RFP out and for $75,000 and that is what the council wants to do, then why prolong it?
Any other comments? No. I don't think you're too far off base, really. I don't. But I would like to see this come back in this mode. Okay. That concludes item D4. And now this is where we kind of move things around. We're going to start with item D6 and come back to item D5. So item D6 is update the status of the pavement management plan. Mr. Livick.
Okay, this is a continuation of the oral report that I brought to you last week, and it really, the emphasis is this year's paving program and where we're going with this year's paving program. But if we look back to June of 2011, City Council adopted our pavement management plan, and we had some recommendations within that plan. One was to achieve and maintain a PCI, or pavement condition index, or grade, if you want to say, of 70 for all city streets. So, you know, kind of a C grade for an average for all city streets. To regularly update our management program for street conditions. And then for programmatic goals, we looked at institute a regular global maintenance street sealing program, which we've started to do, implement effective pothole repair program, implement a regular crack sealing program, and create a 10-year comprehensive pavement management and rehabilitation program. I think the area where we're lacking if we take a step back, is on the rehab section. All these maintenance efforts, we have current funding. I'm going a little afield of what the subject of my staff report was, but in light of what our next discussion is going to be, if you give me that a little bit of latitude on that.
Go for it, Rob.
It's the rehabilitation of streets. So this ceiling program that we're proposing to do for some North Morro Bay streets it's a very good Band-Aid, but it is a Band-Aid. So it'll buy us some time on those streets. For example, let's pick one of the streets that we're going to do, like Island Street. Sure, exactly. There's probably an inch and a half of some sort of pavement there over some old red rock, which is over mud, clay, soil. It's not how a modern public works would build a street. I know all of you have heard my streets lecture before, so try to keep it short. How you would rehabilitate that street is to dig it all up. Do I say this? Our consultant costs for design and inspection. We're left with about $550,000 for a street maintenance, and that buys us about 3 miles of street paving. You see on attachment one the list of proposed streets, and we're refining that list on a daily basis, getting better estimates. The two streets on there that are really questionable because they need a lot of work are Kings and South Bay Boulevard. South Bay Boulevard, we're working with for a grant application for SLOCOG, but that's probably a year or two off before the money actually appears here. Kings, we've done some coring on Kings and hoping to refine what we actually need to do there. So most of the streets that is on this list are in North Morro Bay because there is a deficit of street improvements that are needed in North Morro Bay. We heard our street summit very well. We are using a new pavement management technique, this three-layer Cape Seal, which is a good product, but it's not the end-all that fixes the streets correctly. And then some of the streets we can get by with a slurry or a standard Cape Seal. Let's see if I covered everything. We'll be working conjunctively between contract and our city staff to get the roads prepped before we do the sealing operation. We're finalizing our contract documents. I don't think as we speak. I think the guys went home. But today I know they were working on contract docs to get that project out to bid by about the middle of this month, so that we have award of contract middle to end of next month. We have are not doing street work in the tourist season, but we're early enough before, if we do get any rain this year, before those rains would typically come in late December, January time frame. So that's our schedule for our projects this year, and happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thanks, Rob. To my right, questions?
Okay, so here's the big one. What would happen if you didn't use a consultant and you just went out and did what you think needs to be done?
We'd get another few feet of street. It's about $50,000 in consultant costs, so not a huge amount, but it allows our staff to work on other projects that we do have going. Like there are multiple draws for our attention during the day.
I'm surprised to hear that. So you made this beautiful list of what they need, so you can't just go out and do what your list says?
Well, we do have to watch the contractor work. to make sure that they're doing exactly what they say. We do testing during that time period to make sure that when they tell us they're putting on this three-layer, when we core it, it actually is that. We've done some pre-work, cored some streets, looked at what the subsoil is to make sure that this is actually going to work. So we've done some of that consultant work ahead of time. We're spending money as we speak on streets right now. So,
Noah?
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Levick, I wanted to touch base on Kings because right now it looks like that's kind of on the verge, and we have received a fair number of requests for that area because of the condition, and I think the effects that the water tank leak, for example, has had, and then just the extreme grade in some areas. So what would your thoughts be for Kings in particular if we're not able to achieve the full attention that we were hoping to with the funds that we have available? Are there things that we can do to just make sure that the safety element or the potential of conflict element is addressed?
Well, we'll continue to maintain the safety element. If I put on my traffic engineer hat, rough streets are traffic calming devices in disguise. It slows people down. So it has some benefit. Just a little anecdote. I've seen the fake potholes that you can throw out into the street. We don't need fake potholes here, but we'll continue to repair potholes. But if the rehabilitation costs of Kings, I'm painting a pretty grim picture. If they're too high, we would need to defer that to next year. There's dirt left. And I know that's not realistic, but to get the most value out of those streets, they need to get every dollar out of the pavement that we possibly can, because they've already failed. They're already too far gone to really do any maintenance on. They need rehab work. But given the realities of the dollars that we're trying to work with, there are Band-Aid fixes that can stretch that time, and we can help those streets. I know I got it kind of off topic with Kings, but anyway. Street, what can we do with King Street?
You had us mesmerized on King there, let's get it going.
You answered that. I know some of the complaints we've received from Kings are about pedestrian traffic and so forth, because there really aren't many sidewalk opportunities there. And so not only the pothole does slow the car down, but it also is a tripping hazard. Or brings the pedestrian down.
Yeah. So we'll we need to continue to fill potholes, and that's why we've reserved, a good portion of the paving dollars for that those pothole repairs. I haven't completely sold off King Street yet. It just based on what the core samples show. When we get them back, when our consultant Joe Patterson from Road Scouts was taking the cores, he was fairly optimistic, but I hate to bring that optimism to this meeting, because we always get let down with when we get our contract prices in. But King Street is the soil underneath it is very good, so he's thinking that some modest improvements can be done on King Street, dollar-wise, not modest improvements. But we need to get those tests back from the lab so that we can confirm that.
Okay, thanks.
George?
I give up on streets.
How about Christine?
Thank you. I would say, Mr. Levick, you're fairly famous in North Morro Bay and probably on King Street, too, for your comments when you say that the best thing to do is drive the worst, let the worst streets go the worst and fix the best streets first, or you made some comment like that. So people remember it. But on the other hand, I do want to recognize and thank you and your staff for the amendments to the pavement management plan. So you did an about face and looked at the entire city again, and you amended the plan, and I appreciate it, and I know I'm not alone when I say that. So thanks very much for hearing the council direction on that and seeing that the goals we set this year really did rely on us taking a more holistic view of the whole city and the paving. So I appreciate it very much.
I just want to point out the pavement management plan is not a static plan either. Mm-hmm. It's not something that should be done once every 20 years, like, you know, water rate studies. It's something that we continue to look at. We update our model. We add these new techniques in there. Press a button and it spits out a list of, you know, where the most cost effective streets to look at are. And then we actually put boots on the ground and field verify that modeling work to make sure that it actually does make sense. So it is something that we put a lot of effort into. And hopefully that effort putting into on the front end of it will yield good results on the back end of it.
Thanks for your comments. And, you know, I had the same thanks as well for the update. You know, I know this did come as an amendment from our goal setting. There was a lot of input from the community, from the street summit. We had the red zone that was officially established. We probably could have, you know, made a movie or something out of that. But, you know, we did make some adjustments. It is a working document, so I appreciate that. I also appreciate the attention to the cost-effective strategy. You know, I know we, you know, ideally you'd say, hey, we would just let them fail, and then we'd go use our dollars on other streets and get more out of it. But we're not doing that. But I appreciate the efforts there. The only other comments that I have, and I'm, you know, I brought this up before, but, you know, there is that note, that underlying note of asphalt strike and weather. And I know you spoke to this, but, you know, we are hoping for pavement, you know, and we're looking for that contract to come forward so we can get started on this. And is there any other comments as far as an asphalt strike or what you know of that?
I haven't heard any improvements in it affects one plant. So one of our local plants is union, one is non-union. So asphalt is still available.
Okay.
Caltrans happens to be buying up most of it right now. Just want to say something. The majority of our work that we're going to be doing is ceiling work, so it doesn't involve.
Okay. If there are no more comments, we can receive and file this report. Thank you. Yeah, I'm sorry. Thanks for that. We do have public comment for this. Are there any here for public comment on this? We got carried away on your report, Mr. Livick, on King Street. Thanks.
Hello.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor and Council, my name is Jen Ford, and I just came to thank you because I'm just excited the fact that my potholes got filled in my street, and it's been a while, and my kids can ride their bikes and whatnot. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens. I know that, you know, some of us have been complaining a little bit about the North Morro Bay streets, and I really don't care what they look like. I just want them to be safe. So it's just comforting to know that it is on other people's minds and that you are looking into it. And I know there's no quick fix. It's such a horrific situation over there when it comes to our streets. I know there's a lot of work that has to be done, but it's just great to know that there are people out there that are looking into it and trying to figure something out. So, and that we're working towards something. So I just want to thank you very much, the Public Works and our council and anyone that is involved. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jen. Anybody else for public comment? That was a good one. Thanks for waiting out for that. Seeing none, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council.
Before we receive and file, just did want to put a plug in for anyone that would like some attention to a pothole or to register it formally. We have a Let Us Know modular, the city's webpage on the home site there on the left-hand side, and you can register your information, and then there's some tracking, and that will be the best avenue to get the information to our staff so that they can perform some work on it. And then I just want to end with a thanks to Mr. Livick for also including a tentative schedule. I know that can change, but I think it helps us understand where we are in the process.
May I add one more thing that I forgot? I was
most certainly.
I just want to make sure that we also thank Mr. Woods, Mr. Wilcox, and our city streets crews.
Yeah.
Because they're putting an awful lot of pavement down on the ground these days.
Thanks for saying that.
It's a great work effort that they're doing, putting out there right now.
Yeah.
And we really appreciate that.
Yeah. Thanks to them and your comments. Rob, thank you. Anybody else? Then we can receive and file this and move on to item D5. So we're going to back up one. Item D5 is discussion on potential revenue ballot measures for the June 2014 election, including a sales tax, public utilities user tax, transient occupancy tax, and a 911 tax. And this would be Mr. Schultz.
Yes, good evening. At the March 26 meeting of this year, Councilmember Christine Johnson requested a future agenda item concerning potential new revenue measures. The council supported a request and specifically mentioned as a potential new revenue source a sales tax increase to repair our aging infrastructure and streets. Attached to the staff report are various graphs that were done by Management Partners report on future projections of revenues and expenditures. In the face of the recession that was mentioned earlier by our administrative services director, we've experienced some difficult times, but we've weathered those and have taken steps to retain a balanced budget. However, it is important to realize that the status quo is going to be difficult if we are to retain the same amount of current services that we are providing to the citizens of Morro Bay. In fact, the Management Partners report said the city of Morro Bay must make fundamental changes in the way it is doing business to maintain the current service levels. The community will be asked to pay more to keep them. So my staff report goes through the various revenue-generating measures that are available to the city. I'll briefly go through those that are potential for you, and then we'll open it for discussion. The first one I discuss is the utility users tax. This type of tax authorizes the cities to collect a utility user tax on electric, gas, cable, television, water, and telephone services. There are approximately 150 cities in California and four counties with UUTs. The city of Grover has a utility user tax, and so does the city of San Luis Obispo. Grover's is at 1%, and San Luis Obispo is at 5%, but no other cities in the county charge a UUT. Potential revenues for a UUT, if we were to do one at 1%, would provide us approximately $165,000 in additional revenues. A 5% would provide us an additional $829,000 in additional revenues. The second revenue measure that I discuss is a potential increase in the TOT. We're currently at 10% that we collect on transient occupancy tax. This is a tax on room stays and rentals in our hotels for less than 30 days. An increase of the current 10% to 11% would result in a 10% increase in TOT revenues, projected at about 200. Potential revenues for a sales tax at a quarter cents would be about 400,000, and at that half cents is approximately 830,000. Another potential that we've looked at in the past, and all of these we've at one time or another looked at in the past and are also mentioned in that Management Partners report. Another one would be implementing a citywide assessment. This could be done to address either the streets or parks or other issues. And it basically is a property tax that's put on the property assessment rolls, and it can be used for roads, storm water, parks, landscape, and street lightings. Somewhat just like we have for the cloisters, but it would be citywide. The additional amount that this would generate in the manager's partner's report is $350,000. That's potential per year. Somewhat similar to the city assessment wide is to do a special partial tax. A special parcel tax is the same as it's assessed by parcel. And can be used for the same specific purposes, but does require a two-thirds vote. With an annual assessment of $100 per parcel, the revenue generated would be approximately $600,000. And the last one discussed in my report is a 911 tax, which is basically designed to charge all phone customers in the city equal to pay for the cost of providing emergency police and fire dispatch. This is calculated in the manager's partner's report that would generate revenues of approximately $400,000. So the other part that I do talk about in my staff report is the difference between a general tax and a special tax. basically, in a nutshell, a general tax on a ballot measure requires a simple majority, 50% plus one vote. But if you do a special tax, it requires two-thirds vote. And so one of the issues that we would have to discuss and figure out if you do want to do it is whether you want it as a general tax measure or as a special tax measure. The general taxes may only be put on a ballot at the same general election when the city council is elected. Therefore, it certainly falls on your June election because you will be electing in June. It could also be put on the November ballot, but only if, in fact, there was a runoff. So in most cases, you have the ability to put it on your June or your November. But the caveat is if, in fact, this next June, what happened last time, and there was no runoff, then you would not be able to put it on the November election because we didn't have a general election for our council in that November election last time. So its staff's recommendation really is you know, we do have a really good framework of language. If you're interested in a sales tax measure, and that's what was brought up last time, we have some really good language and examples that were brought forward last time with the sales tax measure. And so my preference would be to have the council pick a subcommittee of two members and to get together, you know, two or three times is all I think I need to get some guidance on some language, and we could bring that back to you for you to take a look at in December. If you don't want to do a subcommittee and you want me to just do that language, I certainly can provide that and provide you with a draft in December. But there are a few little items that, you know, might need tweaking or discussions, just that on whether we should do it in June or November. You know, what should be the primary focus? Should it be a special or a general? I certainly, my initial recommendation is you do it as a general tax because it's 50 plus one. And whether there should be a sunset clause. Those are all the little questions that the subcommittee would look at and then bring back a recommendation of an ordinance in December. You'd have another public hearing in January, and then you would, if council does approve it in February, to put on the June election. So with that, I'll open it up for any discussion or any comments.
Thank you for that. We'll start with questions for staff to the right. Nancy?
No question.
Noah?
Just a quick question about the discussion that has gone on countywide about a countywide sales tax increase, and that would be focused also on infrastructure. That's still in question, but I want to confirm, is that something that would be Morro Bay could be exempt from if we decide, or would that be basically a universal blanket throughout the county if that was passed?
If it were passed by the required margins, and let's say Morro Bay didn't pass it, but the majority of the cities did and the county did, then Morro Bay would be subject to that tax, but also a beneficiary of that tax also.
Mm-hmm. Do we have any sort of information about where the county's at in that process? Would not really have applied to general neighborhood streets and so forth. It was more like interchanges and intersections and bridges and so forth. Am I right on that?
There would be an apportionment of those tax dollars. It would never pass, I don't believe, if it was no dollars went to local streets, if it all went to the major projects. So Santa Barbara County is a self-help county, and a portion of it goes to local streets. They have competitive portions of it where cities compete against each other. Some of it goes to Caltrans. That's what a major funding for the Santa Maria River Bridge is. So it funds the full gamut of transportation, not just it's only for transportation, so streets and roads, but it's also for a portion goes to public transportation, a portion of it goes to bike and pedestrian type projects also.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. George?
I think we ought to get a consultant from Oregon. I just happen to be up in that area. I can't believe they have no sales tax. They have, I don't even know if they have state tax. It's And the roads are just immaculate. I don't know how they do it. Every time I go over there, I just scratch my head because even down in the areas where you're just going nowhere, the roads are just immaculate. I just can't figure it out. So I think maybe you should take a look up there, and they got some consultants up there I think really work out.
Christine?
I don't know. This whenever we're talking about taxes, it's a real hard thing. You know that. In this climate, boy, we definitely, you know, I think we should be talking more about how we can get business revenue, and that's my big gig, you know, to try to build up business for these, for this amount of money that we need. And there doesn't seem like we have enough conversation on that. As far as the TOT tax, I'm very much against that. I don't think we'd do us well to go around with the reputation that we have the highest TOT tax in the county. It's hard enough to get people off that Highway 101 to Morro Bay, and you know they just travel down there, and it's, we should be the lowest, as far as I'm concerned. So, as far as the sales tax go. I hate it. It just might be something we have to do. I wish the county was going to step up and do it earlier, so we could let them do it. But I'd kind of be in support of the sales tax, but definitely not TOT.
If there are no more questions, I'll open it up for public comment at this time. For those who would like to speak on this item, please do so now. Okay. It was.
Well, this is the one, Barbara Dorr, Morro Bay. This is the one I came for. Any new tax should go only to the new water reclamation plant. It's the city's biggest project, biggest cost for all residents and business communities. And if you put it on the ballot, don't play politics, put this one on in June and that one on in November. Treat the residents of this community who are voting as intelligent voters. Let them vote for their rate increase, their 2-8 Prop 218 sewer plant rate increase. Let them vote for a sales tax or whatever it is. But put it out there all at once. Treat us fairly. Let us know what your plans are. Cities had success with the sales tax in the past, and I think probably because you made it real clear what the funds were going to be used for, and I think that must be done, any tax you put on the ballot. And don't vote to put it on the ballot and let the community decide. Take a position. Either if you vote for it, get behind the ballot measure, put your name on that as a supporter, or don't play games. You either support it and you put it on the ballot, or if you don't support the new tax, don't put it on the ballot. It's that simple. Certainly we need things in the city. And I guess I would just say, no utility user tax. You're going to just be addressing it every year. How much are we going to increase it this year? No expanded additional assessment districts, please. And again, if anything, raise the transient occupancy tax. Sorry, but we travel and we stay in other cities and we pay high TOTs. And people come to our city, and they would pay a high TOT. Didn't quite understand the T-bid and how that affected our transient occupancy tax. I thought
as a result of a PWAB presentation. And from that presentation, that was from the street summit. And it was amazing to go to that street summit. There was, I'm guessing, around 40, maybe 50 people that were at that street summit. And a high percentage of them all came up and said, hey, we just want to pave our streets, assess, you know, a tax or do a sales tax initiative. Everybody expressed their interest to pave for paving their streets. So the result of that workshop was a presentation from our PWAB board to council. And at that council meeting is where Ms. Christine Johnson basically made the motion to move forward a dedicated sales tax ballot measure dedicated to repairing streets. that's where this came from. Also in our goal setting, though, as this came up in our goal setting, as I noticed on that it was basically brought out, well, let's look at all these different tax measures. So it's educational to look at all this, but for me, I mean, there's a lot of public input on what people's position on this. Great education, but for me, I think this was all driven by our community that wants to pave streets, and to do so, as we heard earlier tonight, through a sales tax initiative. For me, to move forward on this, it would be a specific sales tax initiative. It would be dedicated to streets. Sorry, Barbara, but it'd be dedicated to streets just as it was proposed through our PWAB board, and it would be a sales tax measure. That was the thrust of that street summit and our PWAB board, and that's where I'd be willing to go on this. As far as the makeup of the committee, I have some different ideas on that, but I'll turn it to my left for comments. George?
Well, I think I already made my comment
okay.
when I was doing the question.
All right, thanks. Christine?
Thank you. I agree with Mayor Irons, and I'd also like to point out to the public comment that streets is our number two major city goal, so we're not going too far down on the list from our number one major city goal, which is the wastewater plant. At this point, I think you did a good summary of how it came forward. I agree. I think that I've had great conversations with people in the community since the staff report went out. I've received a lot of feedback about people's opinions on all of the tax measures, and I think it's a great opportunity for me to see where people stand. I would say no two people agree on all of those measures, and it was really beneficial. So I appreciate all the folks that responded to my call for information. And at this point, I am willing to support. The only reason I can support a tax of any kind is to fix our streets. So that would be the only tax that I'm looking to levy on us. And it would be a sales tax seems to make the most sense and seems to generate the most money to get the project done. Some of the other taxes don't really partner very well with the pavement management plan because they might raise additional revenue, but it's probably not enough to get our streets paved. So I would like to explore that idea of a sales tax, and I would be looking for a general sales tax at this time. And then I'd like, again, to have other ideas, too, of how we move it forward and some other facts. But one more thing I'd want to point out is currently, I think it's really important that we tell the community that right now we are at 8% sales tax. And the only other city in the community that is not 8% is Atascadero, and they are 7.5. The county, if you're in an unincorporated area, you're paying 7.5%. So in Cayucas and Cambria, they're paying 7.5. We are paying 8. And I just wanted to make that really clear because although we have heard folks come in a non-pressurized forum and say, yes, we'd like to repair our streets, and sure, we're interested in a tax to do so, I'm really looking for, now that we've put this out on the table like this, I'm looking for everyone who sees me in the community to tell me whether or not they would go for a general sales tax to improve our streets. So I'd like to hear from the public, and I'm looking for ways that we can ensure that we hear from the public very clearly before we move forward so we know whether we do have support for this or not. Thank you.
Nancy.
Okay. First, to start out, I need to say that I'm not in favor of any of these taxes. I do not like to think about raising taxes in our community. I agree with George. I'd much rather see a stronger non-tourist economic base. I think that's what we need. We're not talking about it. We haven't done it. It hasn't happened. That being said, we need the money. So what's left is to go to taxes. Of the choices, the only one that I would agree on is a sales tax. I know a lot of people have talked about the TOT, and once again, I agree with George. We're off the high. It's kind of an advantage for us. I definitely want to see an ad hoc committee. I think when we did the Measure Q tax, one of the reasons that was successful was because we had a citizens committee that went out and talked to their fellow citizens and made it work. So I would be definitely in favor of an ad hoc citizens committee. I worry a little bit about a specific tax, and maybe Mr. Schultz, you can help clarify this. If we do a general sales tax, we only need 50% plus one, right? If we say it's specifically for roads, which I would like it to be for, by the way, you have to get what kind of a percentage pass?
Two-thirds.
Two-thirds rather 60. Than 50%. So I would be in favor of the general 50 plus 1% with a firm commitment from this council that the money will go to infrastructure improvement. And that's where I stand on this one.
Thanks. I could echo a lot of that. I think, we've had this discussion before, and I'm still in very much the same place I was when these other options were brought forward, and particularly knowing for things like the utility users tax, the rate discussion that we have and know will be coming forward. So the only one at this point that I could support is the sales tax. With the TOT getting up in the 14% range with just a 1% increase, that's not going to be favorable for our market, particularly knowing that we're getting ourselves into an area like Beverly Hills and Palm Springs and Santa Monica, and we're not there, although we have a great place to come and visit. So my thought is, let's continue to work with the Tourism Bureau, and we're seeing good returns there. Let's make sure that we continue to see that effectiveness. We're also committed to working with them to wean the general fund off of the commitments to that program as much as possible, and I think that's something we're going to continue to see. So we will find some relief there for the general fund as we move forward. And ultimately, I think it's just important to make sure that the tourism marketing and management is effective. And I think we're seeing that so far, although there are issues that I think we still need to work through with the overall structure. And we'll get there down the road, I'm sure. So at this point, with the sales tax, my thought is that the Measure Q passage was a really that's a great format for us to work off of. It has the protections and commitments that is necessary for the citizens to know that this is to fix the streets and not anything beyond that. And it's not as much that this council is committed to fulfilling that, but that future councils will still be held to that. That's what I think the citizens need to know to be able to support it. And that then gives us the general tax structure rather than the special tax hurdle. So a couple of thoughts that I have is, I do think that it would be beneficial to work this through a little more and get some better input, because the outstanding concern that I have is looking at, say, we did a 0.25% increase, which is not as much as 0.5%, obviously, but an additional estimated $420,000 a year would really start to get us there when you combine it with the other funds that we usually put into streets. So we're starting to get close. And my number one concern, I think, is that if we go forward and pass that at the 0.25%, and then the county comes in down the road with the next presidential election, and they're looking at 0.5%, all of a sudden we're sitting at 8.75, which is, I mean, right now we're even with everyone, we'd be over, and then looking around at what's going on in the valley and so forth, I'd be just a little concerned that we're starting to create a disincentive for shopping in Morro Bay at that level. And I think that's something that we need to go into with eyes wide open. I'd really be curious to even request that the chamber does a survey to some of their members, as they've done before, and just get some feedback on that. Yeah. What would that mean? I know a lot of the business community realizes that good streets and a presentable town is a great thing for business, but I would assume that most of them would be very uncomfortable with that scenario, and we at least need to give them the chance to voice that, and my thought would be the chamber might be able to help us there. I also think that the Public Works Advisory Board is a good forum for us to work on this and get more details about the structure, and I absolutely agree with the comments about needing that citizen committee and support network like they did with Measure Q to really make this successful. If it's left up to the council and our staff alone, And some consultants in that scenario, we're not managing this campaign well. We need to show this is a grassroots campaign and there's that energy to put into it.
And I think it starts from that grassroots movement, like you say. So I think to move forward on this, I think there's general support to move forward. I think it's just how we structure it. And I see you have a comment.
Just a real quick comment. There's the discussion about whether it's the June election or the November election, and I think we need to take our time to develop a strong campaign, and I would be surprised if we did not have a council election in June. Just because it was rare to see the sort of results that we saw last June, and my expectation is we'll see a council election in November as well. That's a bit of a gamble because it could always happen again where the council elections end in June, but I don't think that's going to be the case. And if it needs to fall back later, that's a discussion maybe to have. But ultimately, I don't see that scenario occurring again.
Okay. George, you have a question?
Yeah, I do. I just go back a little step here. How much did you say it would cost to totally do all our streets? Did you say $40 million? Or did I hear that right?
$40 million is our asset that we have in our streets. I misspoke a little bit. $14 million would bring average PCI or grade up to about a 92. So we'd have an A rating.
So
in Oregon, we'd have Oregon streets here.
Yeah. So $14 million, we'd look good.
Yeah. So if we were to finance that over 20 years, let's say, at figuring 4% just for fun, that comes to about $90,000 a month in payment and interest. So about $1.2 million a year to fund our streets. So if you look at what that tax rate has to be, I think you're up at about 0.75 cents to do that. Now, if you if you continue to fund a little bit of streets through the existing sales tax, you might be able to knock that down to a 0.5 cent sales tax and still make that debt coverage ratio.
The other number.
Yeah.
So I was just running across here. It's about 0.75 cents to possibly do this, and that would probably take That'd still take close to 14 years.
It's going to take 20 years to pay it off.
Yeah, 20 years, yeah.
20 years,
20 years
to
pay, of the interest.
Pay off the debt service. Yeah, and I also want to point out that you still have to continue to do regular maintenance during that
understand.
Time.
I
can't, do all your work in the first couple of years and then sit on your laurels for 20 years. And expect things are going to stay together. You still have to continue to have some money to maintain those streets, too.
Somehow we have to put this road thing to bed. I mean, it's going on and on. It's going to be haunting us forever. I would like to be on the council that finally did put it to bed. It would be great. And I think everybody else would love to see that happen. So, but it looks like we can't do it just on sales tax alone. It's going to be something else. Maybe you've got to have a little property tax to go on with that because, hey, property tax pays for the road out in front of my house. I might not feel too bad about paying that, Anyway, there it is.
Thanks, George. So to move forward on direction on where we'd want to go to that, I think we'd agree a sales tax – general sales tax is what I get from the...
I might have a motion.
Oh, you do have a motion?
I prepared a little bit.
Did you?
I did.
And so we had...
Well, my name's on the report, I had to.
I'll finish pointing out some things.
Okay.
So we talked about
good.
A Measure Q format, a survey, and coming back in November. And those are the items from everybody on council. So if you have a motion, I would entertain a motion.
Okay, let's try. I move that the council direct staff to hold a public hearing at an upcoming Public Works Advisory Board, date to be decided, on a potential increase in the local transactions and use tax, sales tax in parentheses, to gather the public's input for a tax increase to fix streets, and that staff prepare and present a detailed report to analyze the real cost of street reconstruction to several incremental potential tax increase levels, explain the structure and legal basis for a tax increase campaign, develop a policy to ensure safeguards are in place so potential tax revenues are used for streets, explore all options for financing, and report back to council by date to be decided.
The development of the committee itself would be an interesting part of that.
Can you? I'm very open to editing, so did you have a word for that? Do you want to strike that? Explain the structure and legal basis and add in something about the committee?
Yeah.
I'm trying to get this down.
Yeah, I would say explain the structure and legal basis and evaluate citizen campaign committee options. Kind of ugly.
So I guess I still have a question on this. So if we have a public hearing under that format with all that, so basically with that information, we're forming a ad hoc committee to work on the structure of what the language would be.
We'd be working towards that.
Yeah, I think that's important. And then the outcome of that that hearing would basically structure the language of and the goal of what we want for a sales tax.
Yeah, I was hoping to use an existing structure with the Public Works Advisory Board to do some of that legwork and to really ask for citizen input during that process.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I ask another one?
Can we go ahead?
I was going to ask. Rob mentioned that if we put in there, if it's for roads, which is still the elephant in the room here, if we put in for roads, we got to have that 2/3 vote.
Correct.
So
there is no legal mechanism to put into a general tax measure that will ensure that it'll be used for streets. You have to believe by the campaigning and how we have reacted to the Measure Q. Although it's a general tax and it was for general purposes, I believe the city's record shows it has been true to its word and has used it for fire and police and streets, the three things it said it would use it for. But you can't put in a general tax measure that it'll be used for streets and legally ensure it will be
right. Without
then having to get the 66%. But we could go over that with the Public Works Advisory Board in a meeting. I just, we can do it for the, and one of the issues we need to discuss, which is kind of where the ad hoc, more in general, discussing these things in sunshine before it even gets to Public Works. I was hoping to have the two council members and maybe some initial committee members so that they can help us on what to present to this Public Works Advisory Board so that we keep it on track just in case we do want it on the June. You know, we've got December, January, and February. It's got to be done by February. So
yeah. Obviously,
if it's November, we certainly have more time. But that's kind of the initial discussions I want to have in October. PWEB is scheduled when?
October would be the next regular meeting.
And so it would have to be in October going to PWEB.
Should we go ahead and appoint a couple council members to be involved with this?
So, we have a motion and a second on the floor. So we have to clean that up, and then we probably have to make a motion on who would want to appoint for that. So, yeah, we'd want to appoint two council members. But just to be clear, the other part of that was the Measure Q format language was part of that. So we would be addressing the general tax, sales tax measure.
And the oversight.
And the oversight, exactly. Yeah.
And I'm not really clear at what point in this motion the ad hoc citizens committee comes in.
Right. So I think at this point we need to
rescind it.
We need to restate the motion.
So we're going to pull it?
As you read it, if it doesn't include all these items, then we can either pull it and restate it, or that's where we're at right now, because I don't think we have everything in there.
We don't. No.
Right.
Do you like the first section? Are we agreed that then public
let's do this. Let's just do a motion, and then we could bring it back, or you could pull it. We could either motion it, deny this, get it off, or you can pull that, rescind the motion, and we can restate it.
Why don't I rescind the motion?
That'd be great.
I'll rescind my second.
Okay, good. Let's get started then. Okay, Joe, go ahead. All right, go ahead, Christine.
Before I begin again, would you prefer to start with an ad hoc committee here?
So part of that, when I was going through that, part of that was the measure Q format and an ad hoc committee were items that we talked about that needed to be part of the structure.
I think
the other part of that was a survey.
But before the survey and before we go to PWEB, I think we want the ad hoc committee to work with the city attorney to decide what we're going to present to PWEB. So if we start with the ad hoc committee and then move
forward. And the ad hoc committee would be working in conjunction with the city attorney on language. There's one component missing, and that's working with the PWEB on this. And that's the only thing missing on that motion.
For a presentation to PWEB?
With a presentation to PWEB.
In October, perhaps?
In October.
Does that work for us on the staff side? Sorry, it's so jumbled.
So we have a motion out there. Let's get through this one more time. Either we have a second, and I'll repeat the motion as discussed. Do I have a second?
A second with a request that in that language of develop a sales tax initiative to fix the streets. Focused on the streets, we weren't explicit in that.
Okay. So I'll. So we'll add. So to clarify the motion, this shouldn't be this difficult. We're basically directing staff to form an ad hoc committee to work with the city attorney. The Measure Q format for the purpose of streets. We would be conducting surveys and polling our citizens on that. We'd be presenting that to a public hearing at our PWAB board in October. Okay, that's the motion. We had a second?
Yes.
Okay. Any discussion? So we have a motion by...
I have a question. Discussion.
Okay.
It sounds like you're going to do the survey before you go to PWEB in October. I think
the discussions can be done in conjunction.
Right. There's no possibility we'd have the survey results
right.
back, but they would be out there at the same time you're doing the public workshop with PWEB. Getting input from the PWEB and the public, and hopefully the survey will all come back to you in that December time frame to make a decision on the language and with survey results and public input so that you can make a decision on not only the language but which election also you want to put it on.
Great. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay, thanks for that.
And now
we need to do the ad hoc for the appointments. And any volunteers? Anybody jumping out for that?
I'm willing, sir.
Okay,
I'd like
so we
to
have
serve
one.
On that.
Okay, so we have two. Are there any other interests? Looks like Nancy and Noah.
Why not?
So I'd make a motion that we appoint Nancy and Noah to the ad hoc committee.
Second.
So we have a motion and a second. Discussion? None. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion carries. So we have ad hoc committee in there. Okay. With that, that concludes item D5. And we're getting on to item D7. So this is Resolution 4713 confirming the City of Morro Bay's participation in the Community Choice Aggregation Feasibility Study and appointment of individual to the CCA Exploration Advisory Committee. And this would be Ms. Luker.
I think you actually almost gave my entire staff report right there.
There you go.
I will just briefly remind the council that we had a presentation from Slow Energy at our last meeting concerning the Community Choice Aggregation project. And we've you ask us to bring back a resolution, and we've brought back that resolution. And I think it's important to indicate on the very back page of the resolution what the resolution actually resolves. And I think it will answer some of the questions that we had from the public tonight and their concern about moving in this direction. Basically, the resolution commits the city to three things, or states that the city will be doing three things. And basically, the first is that we'll participate in the interjurisdictional effort to investigate the feasibility of a CCA. We'll be tonight. You'll be appointing somebody to that committee, and we will authorize that person. You'll also authorize me to execute appropriate documentation to allow access to bills from PG&E. And then I think it's important to note that the number four on the resolution indicates that adoption of this resolution is in no way binds or otherwise obligates the City of Morro Bay to participate in the Community Choice Aggregation Program. Should there be a request in the future for funding to do the feasibility study if SLO Clean Energy is not successful in any grants, then we would come back to the City Council for that request and an indication of where those funds might come from. I do know that SLO Clean Energy is working diligently now to find some grant funding for feasibility. They have indicated that they're also looking at other cities in the county as far as getting on board with this. I believe they're doing a presentation to San Luis Obispo sometime in November, and I believe Paso as well. With that, I'll turn it back to you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Thanks for that report. Questions for Ms. Luker? None here. None here. One question.
Thank you. I just had a quick question from number three on the staff report and see where we stand. It seems like something that we might, that doesn't hurt to do it at this point, even taking right. the comments we heard, which I do appreciate, and recognize at this point, though, if you read the resolution, it seems like it's not more than one or two meetings, and then see what happens.
Yeah. I'll address some comments from the previous public comment for people that spoke to this but left earlier. I opened it up for public comment. No, I opened it up for public comment, Barbara. I had it open for public comment. I'll respond to some other points. Thank you for that. I had it open for public comment. Okay. So earlier there was some public comment that related to this item, so I'll respond to those questions now. In addition to the public comment, and that there's a comments for and against this earlier on. Some of the comments that spoke to we need to be using we need to be having this choice. We need to be using green energy if you want. Then we had the others that say, oh no, we don't want to get rid of our fossil fuels, so on and so forth. My background, I've been in the energy business. I've worked out at Diablo Canyon. I've worked at the Morro Bay Power Plant. So it's kind of interesting that this comes up. But there's a lot of interesting things about this, for and against. And I would speak frankly about that. At this point, this is just strictly exploration that the city would be going for. And, you know, I think it's actually good to be at the table if there is exploration on something like this. Frankly, I'm kind of, you know, lukewarm on this process altogether. So I don't know about the rest of council, but you know, I think one previous member of the audience that spoke was speaking to, you know, creating another layer, and I get that. But at this point, I think it would be wise for the city to be at least at the table during this process. So. That's why I would be in support of this. And any other questions to my right? Or comments, pardon me.
I think since it's strictly a feasibility study at this point, I don't see anything wrong with approving it.
Noah?
I agree. I think it's an important step. And you put it well. We need to be at the table for this to learn more. Obviously, we would take a very critical approach to it, or which would be healthy and ensure that it's a step that's going to pay off for us if we do go this route, and I'm personally very interested to learn more.
Okay, do we have a motion to approve the resolution, and I think we'll need to appoint as well.
I will move we approve resolution
4713
and confirm our participation in the Community Choice Aggregation Feasibility Study.
I'd second that. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
Do we have to identify an individual to serve at this point, or do it later?
We can approve the resolution and come back.
Okay, great. Then that's all.
Okay, seeing no more discussion, call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. Then we can discuss on the appointment.
I move we appoint Noah.
Can I comment on that?
Not until we get a second.
I
second it, George.
Second.
Wow. So we have a motion and a second to appoint
call
Noah.
Call the question.
Wow.
Well, so we have a discussion going on.
Yeah, let me just say a couple comments about that, because
you have to let me withdraw my call.
We have discussion, so it's still on the floor.
Yeah, I'll just say that I'm probably more inclined to think that this is going to be a good thing for us. I've reviewed the information in a preliminary way, and I'm seeing there are some early benefits to the communities that have participated in this. I would say, though, my history and experience and background is not in this industry, and I would suggest that our Mayor Irons would be a much more effective member of this committee to make sure that we're going to be pursuing this in the best interests. And I understand that he is somewhat cautious about this, but I think that's a healthy approach, and ultimately it would be very interesting to see where he ends up on it as we all look at the information, and I think he can help make this a better proposal in the end with it because of his experience. So my suggestion would be, if he's willing, that Mayor Irons, you accept this position.
I'll second that.
Bring you and the community up to speed on the latest items that are happening with the water reclamation project. I'll remind you that the items that we've bolded on your staff report are the things that we've done as of late. I won't run through those, but I do want to bring out one point. We have added a comment form on the website, which would allow people, individuals that aren't able to come to the workshops or weren't able to come to the workshops and may not be able to participate in the future, to provide comments. I think Mr. Leivick is the one that receives those comments. He's been forwarding those on to the Rickenbach team for their consideration. So we've got a couple of things coming up, including our JPA meeting in September, which is Thursday, here at the Veterans Hall. And then on the 16th, the Community Center. And then we spoke briefly about the biosolids and treatment options workshop that will be September 16th. With that, I'll turn it back over to you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for staff? To my left? To my right? Seeing none, thank you for that update. That's a file and receive, and we can open that for public comment. Thank you. Seeing no public comment, I'll bring it back to council, and we can file and receive. Thank you. Down to item D8. Okay, so now on to declaration of future agenda items. I'll look to my left. Any?
Yes, I have one.
Okay. So we have George.
We've had for a long time a real problem down on Embarcadero, the central Embarcadero. I'd say let's put it like from Harbor Street to Pacific. That's with trucks. This has been discussed for years now, and there has not been a solution for it. I have watched this go on for quite a while now, and I've seen some real safety problems were out there. I mean, the other day I told everybody that I watched a car come all the way, almost from Giovanni's, all the way around those trucks as fast as he can, just to try to beat the traffic. We've been lucky. You all know that my sister got ran over there and almost killed, 6 months in the hospital. So there is danger down there. I don't know how to put this, but I've got an idea what I would like to do, and if anybody's got a better idea, I'd like to see where we would have no parking along the west side of the street from, let's say, 6 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock at night, where trucks can unload. And I've studied it, and really the parking isn't used that time. Normally it's just people that is working around there, moving in and out. But it's pretty vacant from that time. And
I support George's future agenda item.
Do you?
Yes.
Okay. I don't have to go any further?
No.
Can I?
Got a lot more explanation.
And you shouldn't.
George, can I add a comment to your agenda item? If we're gonna bring that back for discussion for that concept, I would request that our parking management plan come back in that, because if you review that, there's some details on that particular area with the very issues that you bring up.
Well,
so
I just brought up my idea. Maybe there's a better way to do it.
Yeah.
But I believe that the purveyors
will support
comply
that.
This and just do the delivering then. And if you don't want to do that, well, then guess what? You don't deliver there.
So George, are you going to present the information for your idea?
Pardon me?
Are you going to put together the information for your idea of what you'd like to do there?
Well...
Mayor Irons.
You did?
Yes.
If I can, a couple of council members have talked to the staff about the concern of the Embarcadero loading zones. So what I would suggest is staff can certainly bring back some different concepts on loading zones and addressing the loading problems on the Embarcadero, and we will take a look at the parking
management plan.
Thank you. I'm on pavement management.
It's an easy one to do.
And see how that addresses it.
Exactly.
And we'll bring back some options, including the option that Councilmember League discussed for the council to kind of review.
That'd be great.
Okay.
Perfect. All right, George. Thanks. To my left, Christine.
I have a question. I'm not sure. I think this slipped through my last meeting, but I was wondering about bringing the final version of the consultant hiring policy for the next council consent agenda. I think I do promote and give funds, public funds, to tourism marketing, the visitor center. We did not include a schedule for reporting. So I was thinking perhaps since we've just had economic development, it would make sense to balance it, and maybe within the next 30 days, and here would be the agenda item, schedule a budget report for the use of city funds by the Tourism Bureau, and to include report of city funds used in marketing for the overnight and the regional marketing. And then going back to the time when the transition happened between the visitor center and the chamber, the visitor center went from the chamber to the bureau, if we perhaps might want to look at the city funds used in that transition and just have all that reported out to us. So we're consistent.
So is this all rolled into one?
Do you want one or two?
Report.
Well, it's kind of,
let's simplify this.
Okay, budget report?
Yeah, budget report is what
from Tourism Bureau.
For the Tourism Bureau.
Report on the funds used in marketing.
Okay.
And then the city funds
at
the visitor
that.
Center. And the visitor center attached to that. Those are like the two.
And just for clarification, you're looking for the funds that came from the general fund subsidy.
Correct, exactly.
Not the assessment district.
No,
okay.
That's right.
Gotcha.
Yes, the funds that, yes. Thank you for that clarification.
So we need one more for support on that. Do we have a third no support on that? Okay. So we clear on that agenda item? Okay.
Yeah, there's just one more that comes out of the tourism area.
One more.
Area.
Okay.
Evaluate options to improve citywide collaboration between economic development, marketing, events, and city operations. And I can clarify if needed.
For community collaboration and marketing?
Evaluate options to improve citywide collaboration between economic development, you could say tourism marketing, if that's better for clarity,
events, and city operations.
Can I clarify? Can you clarify?
Yes.
Yeah, please.
We rely on events to provide economic development and opportunities for tourism marketing and opportunities for overnight stays. And there is, at this point in the city, no one event coordinator, anyone doing that function. No one is the chamber, neither the chamber nor the TBID are event creators. But they work with independent event producers like the car show and the 4th of July and things that come up, like the sports activities that Mr. Woods is doing. So at this point, our marketing arm, which is the arm that's we rely on for a lot of our revenue generating, perhaps could be in a closer collaboration with the city operations side, so there would be other opportunities there that could come out of it. So I'm looking for how can we ensure that those four important groups are operating together. For example, there isn't a meeting right now where you get a yearly event calendar is planned out among those groups, not that I am aware of, where those entities sit down at a table with public services, rec and parks, the permitting agencies, and then the marketing groups. Am I going too far?
No, I get what you're saying.
So if
support to bring it back, we can work with Council Member Christine Johnson. The question is there three council members, and if that's the case, then we'll work with her on the options and how to present a staff report with different options. I mean, that's where I would go with it.
So do we have support for that then? Yeah. Okay. Nancy? None? Noah?
I have one. It's an update and evaluation of options for the old transit building and harbor, options of use.
Can I ask a question? You're aware of the current use or the current temporary use?
Okay. I'm thinking about
beyond.
Yes. So we're starting to look, and this is kind of a placeholder for that time when the library moves on. But I'm also thinking about the successful effort we just went through with 307 Morabe Boulevard, and thinking perhaps that's something we consider as the library use starts to finish as one option. But I just like to make sure we're prepared for a transition to the next use after the library. So this is a placeholder for some time down
the
road.
Sure, I'm fine with that.
I can support that.
Cookie lady.
The cookie lady?
Who knows?
Okay. And so not to be short on the one –